This is the Quality News Network. During today's visit to the Southwest, President Bush pitched a new guest worker program for illegal immigrants. The president says he wants an immigration pact with Congress to be in place by late summer. British military officials placed a ban on all future military interviews with the media for payment. The decision effectively puts an end to the possibility that the 15 British Marines and sailors held hostage by Iran could sell their stories in the future. Iran announced it is increasing production of enriched uranium. The UN Security Council has demanded Tehran abandon such enrichment, which can be used for either nuclear power or a nuclear weapons program. In Seoul, an American delegation was told UN inspectors would be permitted to visit North Korea's nuclear facilities as soon as the U.S. returns $25 million in North Korean funds frozen in a Macau bank. A February agreement calls on Pyongyang to shut down its main reactor by Saturday. Tens of thousands of Shia marched through two holy cities in Iraq today in commemoration of the fall of Saddam Hussein. Protesters in Najaf called U.S. forces and its allies occupiers, demanding they leave Iraq. Tightened security in Baghdad, meantime, includes a 24-hour ban on all vehicles inside the capital city, due to be lifted by tomorrow morning. The Pentagon announced 10 U.S. soldiers were killed over the weekend, six of them on Sunday. Sectarian violence in the past 2 days killed 65 Iraqis and wounded another 29. In the Gaza, an Israeli airstrike killed one suspected militant and wounded two more. Also, a Palestinian militant was wounded in the West Bank. Israel has promised to retaliate against rockets routinely fired from that territory. In Greece, the captain and five crewmen from the cruise ship that sank near Santorini last week are now facing charges of negligence. 1,600 passengers and crew were evacuated before the vessel sank. 730 Americans were aboard. Two French tourists remain missing. In East Timor, residents are voting for president for the first time since they won independence from Indonesia 5 years ago. Eight candidates are on today's ballot. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news that's just ahead, right after this message.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have four convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The U.S. Senate focuses this week on stem cell legislation, considering two bills on the issue. President Bush vetoed a stem cell measure last year. Kazakhstan has been given a $68 million World Bank loan to help save the Aral Sea. Once the fourth largest inland body of water in the world, the sea is vanishing now. The UN has characterized it the Earth's worst man-made environmental disaster. Apple Inc. officials say company sales of iPod music players hit the 100 million mark since its introduction in November of 2001. Citibank will acquire Taiwan's Bank of Overseas Chinese. The deal is valued at $426 million. A consortium of U.S. buyout firms and Middle Eastern investors are expected to submit a $50 billion offer to acquire Dow Chemical. Analysts say it would be the world's largest leveraged buyout in corporate history. The countries that produce more than 60% of the world's natural gas are meeting in Doha to take the first steps to form an energy cartel such as OPEC. The 15 countries involved say creation of a cartel is inevitable, but not imminent. Light sweet crude trading at $61.70 a barrel. That's down $2.58. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 9 points at 12,569. NASDAQ down 2. S&P 500 up 1. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, 6 minutes after the hour, another week begins. Jesus, we survived the frozen Easter. This was just, this was like some sort of a violation this Easter was. And that's right, kids. Go out and chip away at the ice and find your eggs. Mommy, why is there frost on the chocolate bunny? Don't freeze them right off a chocolate bunny, you darn cold. Oh, fiddly dee. At least it's a... By the way, I was just looking at the calendar today, and I'm ashamed of myself for missing the irony. Am I the only one that noticed that Palm Sunday and April Fool's Day fell on the same day this year? A little late, but, you know, at least we're in the game. So I think we've got a plenitude of things to talk about this evening. Oh, God, yes. High on my list. Headline, Levin, Senate will keep paying for war. You know, that came across on the Associated Press Sunday, and it just... You see things like that, and even though this is a room that is absolutely chock-a-block full of incredibly sensitive high-tech equipment, you just want to kick something when you see something like that. Levin, that would be Senator Carl Levin, Senate will keep paying for war. The Senate will not stop paying for the Iraq War or relent from insisting that President Bush keep pressing the Baghdad government for a negotiated end to the violence, a top Democrat said Sunday. Michigan Senator Carl Levin, the Senate Armed Service Committee chairman, took issue with an effort by Majority Leader Harry Reid to limit war spending after March 2008 as a way to end U.S. involvement.
We are not going to vote to cut funding, period. But what we should do, and what we're going to do, is continue to press this president to put some pressure on the Iraqi leaders to reach a political settlement.
In other words, nothing! Not a darn thing! Bupkis! All war all the time. Welcome to the United States of America. As background, the Associated Press writes, Bush has asked Congress for more than $100 billion to pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan this year. The House and Senate have approved the money, but their bills seek to wind down the war by including timelines for troops to come home, something Bush will not accept. So, of course, Levin pipes up. I forget which Sunday show he was on. Did I already go in? Was it on Press the Meat? I don't know. We're going to fund the troops. We always have. We're very strong in supporting the troops, but we're also strong on putting pressure on the Iraqi leaders to live up to their own commitments without that political settlement on their part. There's no military solution. And if anybody talks about not funding the war, I think I'm going to cry. That's, you know, because see, that's, I know, I'm probably running contrary to a lot of good Democrats' feelings on this, but daggummit. At what point did somebody leave Carl Levin out Saturday night and they got frozen off in the... Don't leave... Oh, the freezer right off of Carl Levin. Because by the time he got to Sunday, he didn't have any anymore. Just sent coffee through Agnes's nose again. Senator Arlen Specter, Republican, what do you want, said there have not been sufficient efforts at discussions between lawmakers and the White House. Well, who the hell's fault is that? You know, you get the Senate bill, you get the House bill, and you get George Bush standing there saying, I will stomp my feet and hold my breath until I turn blue if you don't let me have an open-ended war that I can hand off to the next president so we can really screw the Democrats and make sure that my brother gets to be president in 2012. Because, see, that's how it works. Yeah, I don't mean to go out and... I'm certainly not going to call out any bears from the woods to eat any children for making fun of me for getting all prophetic or anything, but that's what this is about. You see, right now the United States would not elect a Bush dog catcher. But what did we have last time? You got 8 years of Poppy in there, and then he sort of 4 year pathetic presidency. And we get Bill Clinton. And we build up the biggest surplus in the history of the United States. And we get, and so in that course of 8 years, we manage somehow to forget what miserable pieces of hopeless garbage the Bush family are, one and all. So in 2000, we get W, who in characteristic Bush fashion screws up everything he touches. Well, now we're 8 years and two stolen elections almost. Well, almost 8 years, certainly two stolen elections, into the Bush regime. And America has once again had it up to its gullet. I mean, the sand's even floating out of our gizzards with Bushes. But with any luck, if Carl Levin can keep collapsing, keep caving, then maybe, just maybe, when the Democratic president is elected in 08, and let's face it, even the pigs understand that, you know, running Rudy or John or sacred underwear Mitt keeps God, did sacred underwear keeps God from seeing the skid marks. Then, you know, that's kind of a pro forma thing, but we're going to have a Democratic president. Because politics is more important to the Republican Party than the United States of America is, than patriotism is, than citizenship is, than the future of this sweet little blue-green time machine orb hurtling through space and time is. The Bush family say, okay, they hate us again. Time to slink back into the shadows and back under the scum that slides along the tops of the swamps and the cypress knees. So what we'll do is we'll just make sure that the war continues to go, and we'll hand it to Hillary, or we'll hand it to Barack Obama, or we'll hand the war to John Edwards or Dennis Kucinich or Bill Richardson. We'll hand it to them. Oh, do I really have... Now, come on. I mean, I'm mentioning Democratic presidential hopefuls. You don't expect me to mention Joe Biden, do you? We'll hand it to one of them and let it screw them up for 4 years so that we can stand on the sidelines and point and say, they lost the Iraq War. They lost the Iraq War. They made losers out of us. They broke our military. And then... Then, like a conquering hero, rising up out of the foul and fetid swamps of South Florida, Jeb Bush will rise up. And he'll say, I'm a Bush. I have family values. And only I can save America. You see how it works? I don't just make stuff up. This is a reasonable extrapolation of current events into the future. because the Repigs understand they're going to lose the White House in 08. But they never, you know, as our good friend Wayne has pointed out from time to time, Repiglicans don't have off years. They start working on the next election on election day, and they don't give up and they don't stop. So they understand they're going to lose the White House in 08. Their job has now shifted. They're into a different trench. And their job has become one of determining how best to undermine America and undermine a Democratic president in the White House starting January 21st, 2009. And it will be a relentless onslaught. They will have a manufactured, phonied up, dummied up, ginned up, faked up scandal waiting for whomever occupies the White House. Now, granted, they've done the most groundwork and legwork on the scandals they've got dummied up, faked up, phonied up, and ginned up for Hillary. But they've got some way. They've got a swift boat or two in the slips for Barack Obama. And they've got it. They've got it worked up. They've got a scandal worked up for John Edwards too. And they've got a scandal worked up for Dennis Kucinich. They've got it. They've got one worked up for every eventuality. They've got one worked up for Al Gore, just in case. Because they know that they can haul out Al Gore is a liar, Al Gore is a pathological liar, a serial liar, Al Gore invented the internet, claimed to invent the internet, Al Gore claimed to be the basis and model for Love Story, yada, 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 and that the mainstream press, being a bunch of lazy sods, will do what they did in 2000 and repeat it all over again. So pardon me if I get just a little bit bent. When I see Carl Levin say that they will not defund the war, that they will give George Bush whatever he wants, but we're going to keep pressing him. As far as I can tell, the only thing Carl Levin is pressing is George Bush's shorts. It just makes me sick when I see this kind of weaselly, gutless backpedaling. But then again, I can almost halfway understand and sympathize with Carl Levin, because the Democratic majority in the Senate is as thin. Well, what is it? No, I'm sorry. I got no good simile or metaphor. It's thin. The Democratic majority in the Senate rides on Joe Lieberman. And Carl Levin knows it. And he knows that if he follows Harry Reid, and if he follows the anti-war movement in the Senate, that Joe Lieberman will, in typical Joe Lieberman quizzling fashion, jump ship, create a Republican majority, and put an end to any hopes of this war ending. Because again, Joe Lieberman, like a Republican, cares more about party, cares more about Joe Lieberman than he does the United States of America. That's simple. It's not complicated. This ain't, as the saying goes, rocket science. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to take you to a different place. A little bit off the beaten path, if you will. There, rented lips. Remember back in the Clinton administration when the right-wingers howled, "What will we tell the children?" Well, now they're howling, "What will we do with the children?" This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
It's the time of the season when the love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy. Let me try with pleasured hands to take you and the sun to promised lands, to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for loving.
Well, I wish it were true. Coming up on 25 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob, and I've got a blog post here from Welcome to Pottersville. Been there? You ever seen it? Welcome to Pottersville.blogspot.com. Now you got to put some hyphens in. Welcome-to-Pottersville.blogspot.com. And today, a lot of great work there from our buddy Jurassic Pork. You know, I love the age of the handle. You know, we had a little bit of it during the CB craze of the mid-70s. Yeah, come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. But it's grown into something entirely different with blogs out there, and people are known as much by their blog handles as by any real name, whether it be Jurassic Pork or Bart Cop or dozens and dozens and dozens of handles at blogs. But in this particular case, we're talking about Jurassic Pork's welcome-to-pottersville.blogspot.com. in which yesterday Jurassic Pork posted up Bob Herbert's column regarding the treatment of children as criminals. And, of course, you read down, you find out disproportionately these are, of course, children with dark skin. When 6-year-old Desiree Watson threw a tantrum in her kindergarten class a couple of weeks ago, Agnes, pay attention to this one, you're just going to love it. She could not have known that the full force of the law would be brought down on her and that she would be carted off by the police as a felon. But that's what happened. The student became violent, said Frank Mercurio, the no-nonsense chief of the Avon Park Police. She was yelling, screaming, just being uncontrollable, defiant. Bob Herbert writes, but she was 6, I said. The chief's reply came faster than a speeding bullet. Do you think this is the first 6-year-old we've arrested? Yeah, let that one rattle around for a couple of minutes. Here's what the police report says. And I quote, Watson was upset and crying and wailing and would not leave the classroom to let them study, causing a disruption of the normal class activities. After a few minutes, Desiree was taken to another room. She was isolated, the chief said, but she wouldn't calm down. She flailed away at the teachers who tried to control her. She said irrational things like, I want my mommy. Okay, I made that part up. She pulled one woman's hair. She was kicking.
And she's 6.
I asked the chief if anyone had been hurt. Yes, at least one woman reported some redness. Just the facts, ma'am. No, I am not making this up. You can go to Welcome to Pottersville and read Bob Herbert's column. After 20 minutes of this uncontrollable behavior, the police were called in. At the sight of the two officers, Chief Mercurio said, Desiree tried to take flight.
Okay, a 6-year-old against how many adults?
What? Does it matter?
6, 7. Where was her parents? Were they called?
Only by the time they'd, only after they'd printed and mugshotted her.
Oh, so they removed the child.
No, we haven't gotten to the good part yet.
Do I want to know?
Oh, this is my favorite quote out of the story. Let's see. Well, no, okay. She tried to take flight, at which point she became a fleeing felon. We could have used deadly force if we'd needed to.
No, what,
okay, I'm making that part up, too.
Wait, what's the felony part here?
Battery on an officer. Ultimately, the child was no match for Avon Park's finest. The cops pulled her from under the table and handcuffed her. The officers were not fooling around. In the eyes of the cops, the 6-year-old was a criminal, and in Avon Park, she would be treated like any other felon. Not yet. There was a problem, though. You know, I know you think it's a little chilly in here, Agnes, so you've got a blanket with you there to sort of keep your legs warm and stuff. Do me a favor. Put some portion of that blanket in your mouth and chomp down on it because you're about to scream.
No.
Now, you know, we've been down this road, Agnes.
This is why I take breaks, folks.
There was a problem, though. The handcuffs were not manufactured with kindergarten kids in mind. The chief explained, and I quote, you can't handcuff them on their wrists because their wrists are so small, so you have to handcuff them by their biceps. I told you to put the blanket in your mouth.
So these grown men abuse and batter a child.
Damn right.
And they're, I mean, why are they police officers if a 6-year-old can take them down?
These are police officers, and I don't know if they're like around here, but mostly anymore, police officers are like, you know, really gymmed up, you know, buff, muscle bound, you know, tough guys with shaven heads and stuff like that, and they can't handle a 6-year-old. I mean, Jesus, Arnold Schwarzenegger did a better job in Kindergarten Cop. Is this okay with you? Or is this, as I would submit to you, for this is my thesis, is this a case, or not a case, but a symptom, is this a symptom of our ever-burgeoning, growing status as the, not a, but the coward nation? We are afraid of our own shadows. We are afraid of our children. We are afraid of our kindergartners.
Well, the one thing that concerns me is, you know, the
black female,
rage.
6 years old, thin build, dark complexion.
No, the rage against
answers
domestic.
Answers the name Desiree.
The rage against domestic violence. Well, ladies, you have no reason to go to the police now because they're beating your children.
The child was fingerprinted and a mugshot was taken. Those are the normal procedures for anyone who is arrested, the chief said. Desiree was charged with battery on a school official, which is a felony, and two misdemeanors, disruption of a school function and resisting a law enforcement officer. After a brief stay at the county jail, she was a brief stay at the county jail, Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
She was released to the custody of her mother.
Well, parents don't matter anymore, don't you
Which
realize
Which is all
that?
She wanted all along.
I believe in kindergarten, there were a lot of children that wanted their mommies.
With all three of ours, didn't we stay the first day?
Yes, we did.
Just to
I don't know, maybe I should be arrested because, you know, I see a good bit of the school officials.
I went all day for Doodle's first day.
I went with Marg and Ferg and Laura. Actually, all three of us were there on Doodle's first day, grandfather and you and me.
Right.
So, it was a family. It was a family matter.
And how many kids in that room said, at some point broke down in tears, with the stress of it all, and wanted their mommy.
Sure, because I
what happened? If mommy wasn't there,
we joined in.
They called mommy.
Well, if they could get mommy.
If they could get mommy, or if they could get daddy, they got somebody. If they couldn't get somebody there, you comfort the child, you let the child know that the child is loved.
You realize that you're not allowed to go to the school unannounced, to your child's room unannounced. You have to have prior clearance.
I know, and 8x10 glossy with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, I know.
Well, parents going in have background checks if they are going to participate in any programs.
Last spring, a number of civil rights organizations collaborated, Bob Herbert says, on a study of disciplinary practices in Florida schools and concluded that many of them, quote, like many districts in other states, have turned away from traditional education-based disciplinary methods such as counseling, after-school detention, or extra homework assignments, and are looking to the legal system to handle even the most minor transgressions. Is this embarrassing for a police officer, or do they just, oh, that's the facts, ma'am, you know, we've got to put them in handcuffs now? Now, this story dovetails into another one that I have had sitting around, and you know me, sometimes I get a sense about a story that there's going to be something out there that again, contextualizes the story. A Washington Post story from last week, last Tuesday, headline, U.S. immigrant raids spur fears in children. Now, I was out and about a little bit today, so I got to hear that the right wing is once again having a great big purple polka-dotted zebra-striped hissies about our failure to control the immigrant population, the illegal immigrants, the sneak-ins. Did you know, Paul Harvey? Did you know that more than 98% of those who sneak in are never charged? Page 2. I needed a screwdriver, so I went down to my True Value Hardware. This is, again, April 3rd. About 360 workers arrested during a raid of the Michael Bianco Incorporated manufacturing plant in New Bedford last month. About 110 were the sole caregivers for one or more children in the United States, according to federal and state authorities. Last Thursday, two Thursdays ago now, Jessica Gunke, a chubby-cheeked fifth grader, joined the ranks of children who have been separated from a parent when immigration agents raided a Dixie Printing and Packaging Corp plant in Baltimore where her parents were working under false Social Security numbers. Terrorists! During an interview in her Baltimore home the next day, Jessica, who is 10 years old, said that although she had known her Ecuadorian parents were in the country illegally, she never imagined they would be arrested. "I feel sick inside," she mumbled, staring at her white sneakers. Her mother, Anna Tapia, who sat next to Jessica on the family's brown velvet couch, pulled her daughter in for a tearful hug, though Jessica's father, Gunke, 45 years old, remains in custody, in other words, imprisoned, for just being brown and from the wrong... Well, you get the idea. The mother was released several hours after the raid so Jessica would not be left without anyone to care for her, but the black monitoring bracelet around Tapia's ankle testified to the limited nature of that reprieve. She must remain under partial house arrest until her case comes up in immigration court. Her chances of winning a stay of deportation appear slim. And according to rules adopted by Congress in 1996, now this would be the no-good, godforsaken, motherless, soulless, godless, worthless, Republican Congress, a judge, according to those rules, 1996, a judge cannot allow immigrants to remain in the United States merely because they have a child who is a U.S. citizen. The 10-year-old is a United States citizen. But you see, the people who hate brown people, who swab toilets and things like that, otherwise known as Republicans and lots of other white folks, they call Jessica 10 years old. They call her an anchor baby because she, under the law, she could anchor her filthy immigrant parents. Illegal aliens. Lawbreakers. Job stealers. Little 10-year-old Jessica could have anchored her parents to the United States, and we'd never be rid of them. They're like vermin. There's a quote in this story. Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, which seeks to limit immigration. So, you know, what they ought to call it is the Center for Studies of How to Screw Immigrants, Center for Immigration Studies, which seeks to limit immigration, said he has sympathy for children in Jessica's situation, but no more so than for any other child victimized by a parent's mistakes. And I quote, "Kids often pay for the bad decisions of their parents. If you do something wrong that sends you to jail, well, your kids suffer for that. If you are careless with your mortgage and lose your house, your kids suffer along with you. The parents knew that they were what they were doing when they had kids here, knowing that they were still illegal immigrants. I mean, honestly, if you don't keep up your insurance and a storm comes along Hyannisport or perhaps Newport and wrecks your yacht, well, the children don't get to go yachting with you anymore either. These are called consequences, and after all, we must take personal responsibility for the consequences of our actions. Oh, Muffy, hand me another lark's vomit canopy and perhaps a hummingbird tongue on a water cracker." Jesus. Because you see, Jessica Gunke, 10 years old, is a citizen of the United States, just like you are. they're going to throw her out of the country because it's more important to these filthy, bigoted, racist, soulless, godless, motherless, heartless, conscienceless ripigs to punish two people for trying to make a better life for themselves. It's more important to do that than to raise up an American citizen in America who might someday, as the pro-lifers are fond of saying, cure cancer. What do you think of that? Shall we all stand up and sing God Bless America now? Did you know that in 1996 the hopelessly inept, filthy Republican Congress set it up so that American citizenship would no longer protect an American citizen? Did you know that? I didn't know that until I read this article. But it's not just Jessica Gunke. It is hundreds and it is thousands of children across the United States. It's children who sleep next to walls in the T. Don Hutto Family Correctional Facility in Taylor, Texas, where various citizens of various countries are held without recourse to habeas corpus or any relief whatsoever, where they are held in what are, in essence and in fact, concentration camps. And you get concentration camps when you live in a cowardly country. Right? Want to talk about this some? You're welcome to. 877-443-2366 is the number. Right into the studio. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a cross for you to bear. Things to go through if you are going anywhere. Stand for the things you know all right. It's the truth that the truth makes me so alive. Things you want are real.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
All right, I gotta admit it. Pink is one of my guilty pleasures. The music, not the person. Okay. Yeah, because I'm hot. I'm Pink's kind of guy. let's before we go to the phones, and we are going to the phones straight away, the last quote from the Bob Herbert column as reprinted over at welcome to Pottersville.blogspot.com says Chief Mercurio, believe me when I tell you, a six-year-old can inflict injury to you just as much as any other person. No! No, a six-year-old can't, Chief! I mean, a six-year-old trying a six-year-old's dead level best couldn't probably even knee you in the... You know... When a six-year-old is doing that, you take the six-year-old in a bear hug. You don't squeeze them, you don't hurt them, you simply restrain them so that they cannot harm themselves or anyone else, and you hold them until they calm down, and you explain to them while you're doing this that they will not be released until such time as they cease their behavior. And you have to be, you know, being as how you're a grown-up and everything, you have to have the patience and determination to stick to your guns, because they're six-year-olds, and they will, by God, test you. You know, I don't just say stuff. I know this to be a fact. A six-year-old will test you. Nah, we'd just as soon put handcuffs on them behind their backs on their biceps and pull their cute little partially formed shoulder blades out of the shoulders out of socket. Let's go to the phones. David calls from Maine. David was responsible for this, alerting me to the blog post there at Welcome to Pottersville. Hey, David.
Yes. Good evening, Bob. I think you have it wrong about the children, because as I recall, when I was growing up, when we had a TO, it wasn't a timeout; it was a thunk out.
Okay, define that, please.
A thunk out.
Yeah.
And that means you got thunked on the head. I mean.
Oh, okay. What are you doing?
That's how I remember it. I might be wrong. I mean,
I
know. And as far as any, could they give any excuse for that? I mean, to give you a comparison, that's as thin as Ashley Simpson doing a concert on the ozone layer.
But, oh boy, that's a good one.
But
isn't this symptom? This is not the disease. This is the symptom, David.
Right. Right. Well,
this is a sign of a country terrified and run amok. Because bear in mind, you know, this was just a little community, and these policies don't happen in a vacuum. Chief Mercurio didn't suddenly decide to start handcuffing six-year-olds. This was a policy handed down from higher up, probably come up with by some criminal justice thing, law enforcement think tank. You know what I mean?
Let's all be clear on this too. I mean, probably this is a system that's running on fumes right now. They're probably, they don't know what to do in situations like that. They were never trained, And they just think they can do anything at will because, you know, hey, I'm having a stressful day. I gotta get some care, take care of this somehow. So I think we have to keep that in mind. And this ties into what I was watching this weekend, which was I'll send you the link to it. Adam Curtis's documentary, The Trap. Have you seen this, Bob?
Mm-mm.
Man, oh man, it's as great. I don't know if you've seen Power of Nightmares, but.
Yeah, oh yeah, I have.
Okay, this is Adam Curtis's new documentary. And what it's about is, it's about how the economic models and the game theory are inserted into our daily civilization and cultures and just our basic fabric of our life. And what it does is it breaks down and explains how the scientist, the mathematician Nash, they paint it. See, I was mistaken too. But Curtis explains it in more detail. Nash is not like Russell Crowe.
Not even a little bit.
He wasn't like Russell Crowe. He had this great, I don't know if you heard of this game, but the first part is called F.U. Buddy. And this was a part of his game. And he explained it, and he explains it in the documentary. Like, he's really, you know, he's really withered down by age and mental illness and all of this, but he still explains F.U. Buddy. And F.U. Buddy means basically what it says. And his whole concept was that eventually someone in a relationship, whether business or a social interaction or family, is going to betray somebody. So he designed game theory based on that, on the F.U. Buddy principle. Now remember, this is a mathematician.
Oh yeah,
and people took this seriously, and they're like, "Oh my God, that's wondrous." So what Curtis does is, I urge people to go to Information Clearinghouse, and I really don't like how they set up the site because it's going to take a minute for you to find the links. But maybe what I'll do is I'll send Bob the links, and they can put it on head on directly, so you can watch part one, part two, part three, because I don't know why, but they don't link them up directly. And
yeah, and I know what you're talking about because I've been there.
Their search engine is kind of twack.
It's a little counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like they got a Masonic search engine or something. You know, like, wait, where's part two?
Oh, they've got Alex Jones' search engine.
I know. They got this Alex Jones search engine. So, you know, when you watch this documentary, I mean, there's parts in it. I don't want to give it away. There's a part in it where a professor goes into a tribe in South America or in the rainforest or someplace like that, and he goes in there and he wants to be friends with them. So the first thing he does is he tries to get their names together, but he can't get their names because they give them all these fake names like Long Dong and just all kinds of foul names.
Yeah.
But eventually they come around and they give him the names. So then he has to earn his trust. But for some reason, this professor isn't thinking.
What is your name? Your mother is a house cat. Yeah, okay.
For some reason, this professor isn't thinking. He has a camera crew there. So he thinks, what can I do to give these people something that they want? And this is where we go into dangerous territory, where you mess with someone's cultural civilization. And this can tie into what we're talking about Iraq. And this can tie what we were talking about Afghanistan. It can turn it into all kinds of things. But basically what he does is he gives this half of the tribe machetes. Kid you not. He gives half of the tribe machetes.
Just half.
Just half, right.
Oh, it's the sneeches all over again.
The other tribe starts getting jealous that they don't have machetes. They're like, wait, what the heck's happening? So they're all gathering up, and you see how the other tribe acts with the machetes. They're on a power trip. They're going by. They look like they're with
Obviously, this researcher has never sat down with a good weekend to Star Trek with a bottle of liquor and learned about the Prime Directive.
I tell you, Bob, one of the most revealing things is Adam Curtis, he asked the guy, he says, wait a minute. He goes, don't you think by having a camera crew and by having machetes that you impacted this and you influenced this in a negative way?
No.
He said that. And the guy got up. Kid you not. The guy got up and goes, I'm done with this interview.
but sort of returning us to our theme, David.
Right.
This is and do send me those links and I'll forward them on to one of our news ninjas and we'll get it up on the network blog.
Okay, I won't have the sonic symbol.
No, yeah, okay, thank you. But seriously, these stories about, you know, children getting treated like adults by the cops, Started coming out, what, 3-4 years ago? Maybe 5, it seems to me. In the chat room, I'm looking, and our moderator, ELO, has put in there, check out some of these headlines. Report of a 5-year-old being caught up in a pepper-spraying incident. Police shoot girl 12 with taser at school. First incident involved a 6-year-old boy who was tasered at his elementary. Autistic 15-year-old tasered, arrested at Florida school. And then a comment about a cop, if she can't take an 11-year-old, she would stand no chance against a grown man. This is you know, what Bob Herbert's reporting on is nothing new, but the fact of the matter is, it is something incredibly disturbing, and it is a reflection of the culture. And it is a reflection, David, of the conservative culture. This is not liberal policing.
Oh, without a doubt. I think even Neanderthal cavemans would have a problem with the treatment of the children.
Now, don't start a Geico commercial, okay?
No, I won't. I was going to go there.
I knew you were.
I think the big thing is my thing when I was listening to it, when you were talking about it, I started thinking, and my mind started wandering, the gears started clicking. I said, wait a minute, where's Al Sharpton? This is the perfect case for Al Sharpton to come out. Instead, he's saying, Don Imus, you need to apologize.
Well, Don Imus does need to apologize, and we'll be addressing that in the third hour of the program. We're going to have somebody from Media Matters for America on and talk about it a little bit, because I don't want to let the Imus story die either, David. Dude does not deserve to have a job anymore.
What he does is he apologizes, and then he makes it worse by saying something else. Keeps digging himself.
Well, and in this particular instance, this is, you know, this hasn't been happening in a vacuum. This is pattern and practice.
Oh, I mean, Don Imus goes after the same things day after day with people who do a flub up or something. And, you know, it's really, really extremely hypocritical that he thinks, hey, this is all just in fun. No, it isn't. You were outside the lines of FCC.
There is no way that this is funny. You know, I don't think the FCC's really got any jurisdiction over it, because that would be a free speech issue if the government got in on it, and he is free to be a racist gas bag. However, it is a business decision, and it is a social decision.
Right.
And I don't want to hear some right winger talking about how, oh, this is a case of political correctness. You know, because that's always where the right wingers go. What about his rights to free speech? You know, this just shows how damn stupid they are, David. Because you do not have a right to free speech in the private marketplace.
I think the people of New York should have a vote on it. I bet you that a lot of people don't like Imus, and you would get a unanimous vote. We want him out of here. Because I don't really think anyone's listening. I think a lot of people on Prozac are watching MSNBC. The MSNBC feed, they're like, oh, Imus.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch this right now. Then I'm going to turn it to Kramer's money.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
That's really what I think about it. I mean, when I go to the Imus blog and stuff like this, I'm just baffled. I'm like, wait a minute. You talk about every single Imus issue on there, and guess what? It's not even, we didn't even have one post on it. I don't know about now, but he hasn't had it for a week. I'm like, this is so revealing.
Well, these authoritarian right-wing thugs like Imus, they're afraid of real discourse. You know, I welcome right-wingers, left-wingers, Maoists, anarcho-syndicalists, everybody on this program, and we'll have a meaningful conversation, and we will talk about things, and as long as nobody is flinging epithets at each other, we'll have a nice conversation. You know, but, you know, usually what happens is a right-winger comes in, and they start throwing names around, and you wind up having to shut them down or something like that, because
right.
They're, you know, they're potty mouths, and they have the social skills of, you know, they're the ones that need to be hauled away in handcuffs. Like, you know, like a kindergartner. Wow, you know, what a disconnect.
Yeah, I mean, but as I think, as always, there's always this this silence, this void,
the crickets.
This endless void where something happens, and these bloggers are so afraid, and they just completely skip over it. I mean, I would respect them a lot more if they talked about every single issue. I mean, like, wait a minute, this is what I think about the Imus issue, but they don't even talk about it. Hell, Bob, they're still on Pelosi in Syria.
I know.
Such a non-starter. Nobody cares about that. You can go out and make America go, you know who Pelosi is? Pelosi. I don't know who Pelosi is.
Doesn't she drive the 22 car on the 22 truck on the Bush truck series?
Doesn't she have
Craftsman truck series
downtown?
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's really. Doesn't she have a supermarket? Pelosi.
Well, but they've got it. They've got to do this because
that's
the one thing. The Republicans are much better at being an opposition party than they are at governing. And we, you know, our side, you know, Carl Levin. What do you want? Hey, David, we got to roll on. We're late for the news, but I sure thanks for sending the link to the blog and thanks for your comments. I appreciate it.
No problem, Bob. I'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah, and send the links to the movie, please.
All right, I will.
All right, later.
Later.
We are late for the news, but we'll be back with your calls at 877-443-2366. If you're on the line, please stay there. We'll be back to you. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice.
This is the Quality News Network. Some 13,000 National Guard troops are receiving orders for possible deployment to Iraq. For many, this will be a second tour. One unit could be shipped out in December. The final decision on the troop deployment will depend on how the war is going. Meanwhile, in Iraq, tens of thousands of Shia marched through two holy cities to commemorate the fall of Baghdad 4 years ago and to demand the U.S. occupiers leave Iraq. Radical Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr ordered the march. To head off any violence in Baghdad, Iraq's generals tightened security by imposing a 24-hour ban on all vehicles inside that city. The ban is due to be lifted by tomorrow morning. The Pentagon announced 10 U.S. soldiers were killed over the weekend, six of them on Sunday. Sectarian violence in the past 2 days killed 65 Iraqis and wounded another 29. An Afghan translator and journalist was beheaded by the Taliban on Sunday. He was captured traveling with an Italian reporter who was kidnapped and later released. The New York Times reports more than a dozen Muslim prisoners at Guantanamo Bay are on a hunger strike. They're protesting conditions at the U.S. facility. The military has begun force-feeding them. In Pakistan, radical Islamic clerics have demanded the Minister of Tourism be fired after a media photo showed her hugging a foreign man. Clerics call the act a great sin. The minister says she had just made a charity parachute jump, her first, when her instructor gave her a pat of support. British military officials placed a ban on all future military interviews with the media for payment. The decision effectively puts an end to the possibility that the 15 British Marines and sailors held hostage by Iran could sell their stories. And Iran announced today that it is increasing production of enriched uranium. The UN Security Council has demanded Tehran abandon such enrichment, which can be used for either nuclear power or nuclear weapons. In Tehran, the chief nuclear envoy today said his country is ready to engage in serious negotiations on the program, the enrichment program of uranium. The West insists Iran prove its aims are peaceful before the country is allowed to continue its nuclear development. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. downtown Carmel.
Kazakhstan has been given a $68 million World Bank loan to help save the Aral Sea, once the fourth largest inland body of water in the world. The sea's vanishing, and the UN has characterized it as the Earth's worst man-made environmental disaster. Last week's deadly earthquake in the Solomon Islands raised one of the islands 10 feet from the sea, destroying some of the most pristine coral reefs in the world. Those exposed reefs are now dying. Russian technology will soon be providing competition for the U.S. GPS satellite navigation system. Using Cold War-era military technology, Russia will launch its own version next year. It's called GLONASS, or Global Navigation Satellite System. Billionaire space tourist Charles Simonyi and two crew have docked with the International Space Station. Simonyi reportedly paid $25 million for a 10-day stay on the outpost. And the countries that produce more than 60% of the world's natural gas are meeting in Doha. They're taking the first steps to form an energy cartel like OPEC. The 15 countries involved say creation of a cartel is inevitable, but not exactly imminent. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.51, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 9 points, the NASDAQ down 2, and the S&P 500 up 1. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Chris.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 8 minutes after the hour. So nice to have Agnes back from her Friday night off. I informed her of the vote. She does, if she chooses to accept it, have every Friday night off hereafter. Much to your chagrin. I know.
Thank you, kids. I love you all, too.
A couple of program notes before we do go running back to the phones. This evening, as I mentioned, talking with David, we will have Dennis Yedwab, senior advisor at Media Matters for America, on in the beginning of the third hour to talk a little bit about this IMUS matter, because this thing is getting legs. It deserves to have legs. I mean, it should have legs like a daddy long legs has legs. This should finally be the end of Don Imus's career. He's filthy rich. Enough already. Not because I want to censor him, but because he's an ass. And he has no place in anything. No, it's just time to go. Just like it was time for Jimmy the Greek to go some year. Sometimes, I don't know, maybe it's subconscious, the thing with Imus, you know, where he knows it's time to go and he's just trying to get somebody to help him out the door. This is it. But for now, we go back to the phones, and our good friend Koss is calling from Florida. Agnes, need help with a button. My arms aren't that long. Our good friend Koss is calling from Florida. Cossack! Hey, man, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, you?
Alive and semi-kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, unfortunately, this isn't that new a deal with children being arrested, handcuffed, and dragged off to the Huskow.
Okay.
It happened to me when I was 8.
And not to ask you to give away any state secrets or anything, but how many years ago would that be?
It was in 1960.
Whoa.
The county mounties where we lived have for a long time had a very bad reputation, and it's very well deserved. And they kicked the door off the hinges to my house and came in to arrest my older brother, and they were beating him senseless in the front hallway. And I didn't take too well of that, so I kicked one of them in the shins, and I was promptly thrown up against the wall and handcuffed. And then they sat us in the squad.
And you were how old again?
8.
Charming.
And they dragged us 30 miles to the county seat and promptly threw me into a cell and locked the door.
And you were there for how long?
Until my parents got home and found out what happened and drove to the county seat. And then they had a little problem. You have to remember, there's a little background to all this. I grew up, as I think you know, my mom was dragged off to the concentration camp when she was 17. And I grew up with, I didn't have boogeymen, I just had men in brown shirts who come in the middle of the night and drag you away and the kinds of horrendous things that happened to you. And so after a couple hours of sitting in the cell and having all these really nasty people making all kinds of suggestions I couldn't understand, when they finally came back in there to drag me out of the cell, I was sure they were going to take me out and shoot me.
Yeah.
And so I wrapped myself around bars, and they couldn't fly me off.
You couldn't get you in there, and then they couldn't get you out.
Exactly. They had to get my dad back in there, and he had to talk me off the bar. And to this day, I don't deal real well with authority figures.
I've always had that problem myself, but not for the very good reasons that you have just expounded. However, this, I mean, and I'm not justifying anything, Cossack, but they were there for your brother, and then they came for you. That was in your home?
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's a little bit, it's at least a shading of difference when it's in school and it's a six-year-old and it's a kindergartner and there are supposed to be professionals there who know how to deal with a child having a tantrum.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
I'm not justifying their actions, but, you know, you were defending your brother and you went up and you did what you could and you gave him I'm sure the guy had a nice goose egg on his shin at least.
Oh, yeah.
In this particular instance, this little girl's biggest crime was crawling under the table to get away, and they sent a couple of jackbooted the monsters to drag her out, and then the business with the handcuffs around the biceps just... God. But you know what the saddest thing is out of this whole thing, Cossack?
Mm.
Because of the way that the, among other things, and most particularly, the Burger Court... interpreted, or loosely use that term, the Constitution, the cops are off the hook before they can ever get on it, because they're going to claim that they were acting in good faith and that they are therefore immune for their acts.
Exactly. And that's crap. That's an excuse. It's not an explanation.
Exactly. But it'll get them off.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you would think that this child's parents should be able to pay her way through Harvard or Yale on the judgment that they should be able to get against that police department and against that school board. Uh-uh. Because at the same time that the Bush administration has run around telling the rest of us that we need to be personally responsible for our actions, they have done everything in their power to close the courthouse doors to people who have legitimate grievances.
Certainly. Well, it's like that... 90-year-old woman they shot to death by accident in Atlanta.
I saw a reference to that in a blog the other day, and it just turned my stomach over all over again.
I mean, you know, fine, she shot one of the cops. Of course, they had bulletproof vests on, but if you kick in somebody's door at 3 o'clock in the morning...
I'm shooting!
Yeah. that's insane.
You know, I don't want to turn this into, NRA gun talk, but, you know, our home defense weapon is a 12-gauge shotgun.
Yeah.
We don't use pistols for home defense. Because 12-gauge shotguns go in like baseballs and come out like basketballs.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit, you know, the 2 3/4-inch double-aught buck round. And that unique unto the entire world sound of a pump-action shotgun racking around into the chamber will put the fear of God through into anybody coming through the door.
Oh, heck yeah.
So, you know, we're rural, we're country, and, you know, there's a reason to own a firearm around here. But, yeah, but see, the thing is, because of this right-wing Supreme Court, you don't have to knock anymore.
Right, and that's also lunatic. I mean, you remember where that whole concept of the no-knock warrant came from, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was in the beginning of the drug war. It was, you know, the excuse was, well, if we knock and announce, these people are going to flush their drugs down the toilet. Well, first of all, if they have small enough quantities, they can actually flush it down the toilet in one flush.
Not much of a case, is there?
Right. You shouldn't be breaking in the first place. But that's where the whole concept originally came from. And now that's the way they serve all their warrants. It's like, you know, police, bam, they knock the door off the hinges, and they don't even give you a chance to adhere to their instructions.
They don't. And the thing is, it's bad for you. And I don't want to make this turn this into a gee why I hate cops, because I don't. It's bad for officer safety as well.
Of course.
Because when you do come barreling through the door, 92-year-old grannies who have a 38 or whatever are going to use it.
Exactly.
And, you know, so far they haven't come up with Kevlar armor for the head, as G. Gordon Liddy pointed out a few years back.
That's true.
During the Waco thing, wasn't it, when G. Gordon and Liddy advised right-wing militia men to always shoot at the heads of the FBI because there wasn't any body armor there?
Exactly.
I hate these people, Cossack. I loathe them. I hate what they're doing to our country. I don't know if I'm expanding on it correctly or well enough. When you are a terrified, cowardly country like we are now under George Bush,
mm-hmm.
this is the kind of crap that you get.
Exactly.
And this is the kind of heartbreak. And you know, sooner or later, they're going to kill some kids.
Oh, they will. They've already been tasering people.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking about a 6- and 10-year-old kid. What would you do, Bob, if for some reason the school that your kids are in called the cops and they tasered your child?
I'd be in prison because somebody would be dead.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I mean, I'm you know me. I'm all kumbaya and everything, but kumbaya ends at the beginning of my kid's nose.
Yeah. You don't shoot 50,000 volts through a child. It's just, you know,
you can stop hearts that way.
Yeah.
These are just the weapons they're using now. I mentioned earlier, I was listening to Paul Harvey today. The Navy has developed an electromagnetic weapon that can penetrate walls and it debilitates people on the other side of the wall.
Right. It basically scrambles your neural net. It's like waving a 10-pound magnet at your computer.
Yeah, basically. And, of course, add that to the microwave riot weapon that the Air Force general wanted to use on, say, you know, striking workers
mm-hmm.
in America.
Yeah.
How is this anything but a manifestation and a profound symptom of a state hell-bent on fascism? This is what fascist states do. This is not what a republic does. This is not what a constitutional a Republican democracy does.
Well, the days of the American Republic, I fear, are long gone. We have become the American Empire, which means that, you know, we cannot maintain freedom at home if we are to maintain empire abroad.
Well, I fear that there's a great deal of truth in what you say. I wish there wasn't. But I'm not going to take issue with you. So, you know, it's just, but it makes you want to grieve, because by the same token, Glenn Beck or any of those right wingers all over the television can squeal about how the liberals are killing America, but if you put one person on the television to point out all these little fascist tendencies that are growing up like mushrooms after a rainstorm in the Bush administration. Then, you know, you'll be yanked off the air immediately.
Yeah. I mean, I'm astounded that what's his name?
Imus?
No.
Beck?
Our guy on MSNBC.
Oh, Olbermann.
Olbermann. I'm astounded that he's still on the air at all.
You know, I think he's almost so public that they can't get rid of him. He's not where Donahue was. Donahue had the highest ratings on MSNBC before the war, but they got rid of him because even with the highest ratings, he was not somebody that they could just... the highest ratings they had weren't enough ratings to merit paying attention. Now they have to pay attention to the ratings that Olbermann's bringing because he's carrying that network on his back.
Exactly.
Chris Matthews isn't doing it. Yeah, I know. They got rid of Bullwinkle's baby sister. And now, if you notice, as soon as Olbermann's over with, they start running documentaries about prisons.
Exactly. And this is where we're going to send old Keith as soon as his ratings fall.
Yeah, the prisons?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Koss, so good to talk to you. I hope that we don't hear from you nearly enough.
I'll try and make it more frequent if I can.
Well, please do.
All righty.
You take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
In Florida, our good friend the Cossack. And to Andy in Wales. Hey, Andy, good to hear from you.
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going well. You know, I got to worrying because I wasn't able to screen call, or, you know, and not screen, but answer calls Friday night. And I thought, you know, I bet one of those people I put on hold was Andy, and he just didn't know if I was ever going to call him, come to him, and it was going to cost him a fortune calling in.
Yeah, exactly.
Was I right?
You were right.
Yeah, man, I'm good.
No worries, man, that's cool. You know, it happens. And no, Agnes can't have Friday nights off.
Okay, very good.
It's now official. I don't care what the rest of the people say. This is a one man, one vote situation. I'm the man. I have the vote.
All right, and it's official. It is a one woman proletarian uprising.
Yeah, basically, she should get Mondays off. Monday is a hectic day when everyone has to go to school and she has to get everything done. So Monday evening, if you're going to give her an extra night off, Monday.
Okay, well, she can, you know, hey, she's the boss. She can have anything she wants to when it comes right
well,
down to it.
Yeah, basically. I mean, if she's not going to listen to me, if she wants the night off, she'll take the night off.
Right.
But no, the police thing, I'm quite interested in the show topic. I'm not going to drag it directly off into my normal topic of class warfare. And you know why?
Why?
Because you're already talking about it. Because this is exactly it. The militarization of the police, the training now, is what gets them out of liability. Did you know that?
How so?
Basically, that they couldn't work out how to stop police being liable for shooting people in the head 18 times, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they do that is because they do the same training techniques as like the Marines do. You know, little things pop up as you walk through a thing or go into a room and you have to shoot the right ones, yeah? We all know what those things are. But of course, for police, that's a really bad idea because it means that they tend to pull out a gun and shoot before they think about anything else, yeah? Because that's what kind of is Pavlovian response into them, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So the way to get around them being, you know, constantly banged up for undue use of force or improper use of force was for the companies to be given exemptions in their training. And so if you're trained by, you know, American firearm training and tactics or whatever, or you know, they've got various different names, you get a certificate that basically exempts you from liability if you kill someone with a gun because it says you're wired to kill people with guns.
And that this is a function of training. I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
And that's what gets them off it. And that's why those dudes that emptied like 40 or 50 rounds into that car in New York a couple of months ago and the guys that killed the little old lady and all the other...
Yeah, Elmer Louim, Abner Louima, Amadou Diallo. Yeah, all of it. Right. And, of course, let's remember that in the case of Abner Louima and Amadou Diallo, weren't those Rudy Giuliani's New York police?
Yeah. And, you know, it's part of the thing. It's just like they want to get you used to dudes walking around in the armor, they want to get people used to the police being untouchable because the police are the biggest gang in town. That's it.
Yeah, so somewhere along the way, a little directive has come down of, you know, don't send your touchy-feely, squishy little liberal school counselor in to deal with the six-year-old having a tantrum. Call the police, and we will begin conditioning those six-year-olds to understand that, above all, you must yield to the authority of the authorities.
Yeah, I mean, nobody ever phoned up the school and said, call the police every time there's a problem child. But the situation is engineered so that you know, look, school teachers aren't allowed to discipline children anymore. If they even raise their voices, they can get sued. Yeah, it's even happening over here. And it's probably been happening over there for about 10 years, if that's the case over here. So you can't touch the kids, you can't shout at the kids, you can't put the kids in a room for bad kids. So what can you do? They're left with no option. So it's not the teacher's fault. The teacher didn't want to call the police, but what can they do? They have to call the police. There's no one else they can call. Social services aren't going to turn up, are they? So they have to phone the police, and the police only know one set of responses now, which is maximum force.
Somebody's going to die, Andy.
Lots of people are going to die, Bob. Lots of people are going to die, and most of them are going to be wearing uniforms and body armor that they think protects them. Because do you know how long it takes a man to die if he's been shot in a certain part of the leg?
Actually, I kind of do, because I remember the story of Confederate General Albert Sidney Johnston. Bled to death in his boot.
Yeah.
Thought it was a flesh wound.
It takes, if it's a flesh wound, you can bleed to death in a couple of hours. If it hits the right artery...
You're gone in minutes.
2 minutes? 2 minutes, 30 seconds? And you know, they're not armored there. If you get shot in the armpit, where would the major veins and arteries go through? Again, 2.5 minutes. So, if you point a shotgun at one of these dudes in body armor, you're going to kill him. It doesn't matter about the body armor. He's going to have a really well-preserved torso, but his face, arms, and legs are going to be peppered and ripped open. And probably blown off if it's 12 gauge.
Well, it's I hate thinking about things like that.
But
Andy,
this is what's going to happen, you know. People in these police units, in these like National Guard and military police units, are going to be deployed in your cities, and they're doing the mock training. I mean, there was Czechoslovakian special forces training with Americans in Texas just a couple of weeks ago.
I read something about that.
In Russian and in Czechoslovakian and stuff. And you know, they're training world police to act the same way. It's all being organized, and they want everybody reacting the same way to the police. You've got to be scared of them. You've got to do what they say, because otherwise they'll shoot you. And that's what they mean. And, of course, every time this has been done in history, where they've ramped up the police and made it much more military, eventually the small number of people in uniform get slaughtered when the mob get really, really angry.
And then they slaughter a whole bunch of the mob.
Well, yeah, but eventually the mob slaughter the troops because.
What do you do with the good cops, Andy?
Well, the problem with the good cops is
I mean, because they do exist. Let's be fair.
You just need to talk to them before it happens. You need to talk to them. You need to approach them as a human and just, you know, ask them what they think about things, challenge their beliefs, give them copies of, like, you know, Loose Change or Alex Jones's films or. You know, just give them all this stuff that shows them, you know, why it's a lie. I mean, there's so much information out there, it's not even hard to do. But, I mean, Alex Jones has authorized anyone to copy his films and reproduce them and send them on. And his films are really well made. I mean, you might not agree with everything he says in every film, but you can't argue with his logic and his reasoning.
Some, yeah. Sometimes I feel like I'm listening to, you know, America Coast to Coast with George Norrie, but yeah, that's another discussion altogether.
That one misses me. Do you mean a bit mad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, he is a bit mad, but he'll admit he's a bit mad, and the thing that's driven him mad is the fact that the New World Order is trying to kill you, me, him, and everyone else, and his children.
And, you know, if that is the definition of madness, Andy, then we're all crazier than a bedbug.
Yeah, basically. I mean,
sometimes I do. I sit around thinking... When it all falls down, where do we go? And the globe has gotten small enough that I don't know if there's anywhere in the world that you can go and get away from the police state if the police state actually wants to find you.
No, well, the police state is fully in operation, but the problem, of course, for the police state is that they've basically got an uncontrollable lot to control, and at the moment it's kind of ticking along, but. Sooner or later, they'll screw up and they'll push things too far. And they just don't accept this. I mean, this is why they're willing to take such insane risks, because they just simply don't care about the consequences. To us, it's a mad risk. I mean, you know, the atom bomb. Nobody needed to use that. Everybody knew that. When it was developed, it was never. They knew they had Japan beaten and they were never going to have to do it. You know, I mean, Japanese cities were built of wood.
Yeah, it was racist payback, and we'd already managed to burn... very few people, and again, this is a function, Andy, of the lack of knowledge of history. We did more damage, correct me if I'm wrong, we did more damage to Tokyo with the firebombing, the deliberate firebombing of Tokyo, than we did to Hiroshima with the atomic bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because just as in Dresden, we created a firestorm.
Well, more so because it was wooden already.
Right.
Dresden, you had to work harder at. But, I mean, the point with the nuclear weapon was not that they needed to use it on Japan or even...
No, it was payback.
No, not even that. It was basically saying, like, to the rest of the world, we, the people who run the United States, now have the ultimate weapon and you can all go jump. And, of course, the Soviets surprised the hell out of them by developing it in just a few years. And the whole reason for using the nuclear weapon... just to show everyone they had it. That was it. It wasn't anything to do with paying Japan back. It was to show everyone around the world, we've got the bomb.
Yeah, it was a cherry bomb in a toilet.
Yeah, well, you know, if you want to be part of us, then, you know, you better get on side now rather than later because we're going to screw you later. And basically what's been happening since is that. I mean, you know, look, it all goes back, if you don't believe any of the other things, it all goes back to the Federal Reserve. And watch Aaron Russo's film.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Federal Reserve, and you know who I think about. There's a lot of reasons to despise the man, but I think about Andrew Jackson. You know, genocidal maniac, no doubt about it. But the original debate over the Bank of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and he warned again and again and again about a nationalized bank.
Mm-hmm.
About letting the moneyed interest to take control of the country.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one. I mean, pretty much most of the founding fathers. Because, I mean, they realized that some of them would try and do this. Do you know what I mean?
Cause, mm-hmm.
And they realized that if I didn't do it first, then someone else is going to do it first. That we need to set it up so no one can do this. And it was kind of arranged that way. But then, of course, a bunch of people managed to get the 16th Amendment through without it being ratified by a single state. Which I don't understand U.S. law completely, but I understand amendments have to be ratified by all of the states.
No, two-thirds.
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress, and two-thirds ratification by the states admitted to the Union at that time.
Oh, right, that's it. You got to get the same thing in both Congress and the state.
Right.
But the problem, of course, was it didn't go to Congress or the state. It was.
Well, I do know the 16th Amendment is a bizarre little piece of legislation and a bizarre little instant in American history.
It's not bizarre. It's a job, man. A job was done on the American people, and it was a very successful job, and they've made a lot of money since then. Because what happened was the bankers, and that would be the Morgans and the Rockefellers, and yes, the Rothschilds and all the other bastards in charge of everything, got together and bribed a whole bunch of congressmen and the president. And basically said, you know, here's a fat lump of cash, give us control of the money printing. And so the Federal Reserve was created and the 16th Amendment was created and thrown through. And I think they did it at Christmas holiday when there were only about 20 or 30 congressmen and senators in Washington. And these guys basically were all paid for and they agreed it would go through and it went through. And then the president went and told the country that the states had ratified it.
You've piqued my curiosity. I've got to go back and re-educate myself on it.
Right, okay, here's the thing, right? On Google Video, Aaron Russo, Freedom to Fascism, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely right. I mean, I checked up on it afterwards and went through Google and looked and stuff. But the number of federal agents, federal tax agents, who've quit and don't pay taxes anymore is unreal. I do mean unreal. It's like thousands of them. Because they were getting challenged by people who knew, you know, look, I'll pay my taxes when you can show me the law that requires me to pay my taxes. And so they start looking into it. And, of course, the first thing everyone goes is, income, it's income. And then you can point out that actually income only applies to the profit from shares and those sort of, you know, and dividends. Income doesn't apply to wages. So if you get paid a wage, you're not liable for income tax.
There's a lot of people who have tried that who are in prison, Andy. I know that.
Yeah.
Because, again, bear in mind, this is one of those little moments in American jurisprudence. We set up, instead of like the federal district courts, which are supposed to handle federal claims, we set up the so-called federal tax court.
Yeah, but the federal tax court has been challenged in a class action to prove that these people need to pay their taxes, and they just can't do it.
Yeah, but it still exists.
Well, yeah, they're not challenging the existence of the court, but they're just challenging the court to prove that they're allowed to put people away on this law, because they know they can't challenge the existence of the court. So now the court has basically had to admit it can't prove that people are supposed to pay taxes, so it can't put people away for it. It's all very bizarre.
But they still are.
Oh, well, they still are, but if you have a decent lawyer and you put your argument in...
Oh, there, and yeah, there's the $64 million question.
That's where the class action comes in, because that means a whole bunch of lawyers are working on it, doesn't it? Because as soon... I mean, there really is a very good chance that this could break, wide open.
The sad thing is, if something like this should break, Andy, we're going to get something even more evil to replace it.
Well, I just like
the flat tax. I don't know if you've read anything about it, but that's the darling of the Stephen Forbeses and the Neil Bortzes and.
Yeah, of course it is, because they want to pay exactly the same amount as a poor person pays, which means that they get even more money to take home and spend on cocaine and fast cars.
Yeah.
But
hummingbird tongues.
Sorry.
Hummingbird's tongues.
Yeah, but quail's eggs and all that nonsense.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's been tried in a couple of countries. In every country it's been tried, and the economy promptly collapsed. So they could do, but I don't think the super rich will let them, because the super rich aren't interested in the flat tax. It's never going to happen in America, I don't think. And if it does, I reckon it's going to ruin you. But the super rich aren't interested in the flat tax at all, because, I mean...
Well, the system works quite nicely for them right now, thank you very much, because they're not paying much in the first place. Well, and they've got an entire cadre of right-wing yammerheads, Andy... who will say things on the air like, "Well, of course they shouldn't pay the tax. They're creating the vast majority of the wealth."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, well, the stuff that you're driving down the road and you just boom, telephone pole when you hear it, because it's so outrageous. It's so utterly, it's just insane.
Yeah, I know, but because of the lack of education amongst the American people, that's what most people will just accept. I mean, you and I know that they don't create wealth. You and I know that they steal wealth, and that's all the super rich do. They're parasites. But, they've had, since the end of the Second World War and the control of the education system in the States, to convince everyone otherwise. And it's only a few people like you and the other enlightened liberals that have slipped through the net. Now, people are starting to wake up now because it's getting so bad.
Oddly enough, they completed the job, the number, if you will, whatever, on the educational system. I didn't so much slip through the nets. I got in under the wire, so to speak. Because I graduated from high school the year that Ronald Reagan's first year of his presidency.
No, that was where total control went into effect in school.
And that's the beginning of the downward spiral of the American public education system.
Well, yeah, because I mean, from the Second World War up until the sort of 70s, they were working only really on the very top end of the school system, the universities. And from the sort of 70s through the 80s, they started working on the lower levels. They've done all the...
You know what they wiped out of the curriculum, I think, first, Andy? And this is telling.
Civics.
Bingo.
Yeah, of course they did, because civics is the thing that teaches people how to, understand their government. Do you know what I mean?
And also teaches them that they have a duty with regard to that government.
Oh, yes.
And that they have rights, but they have obligations.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly why it's cut first, because you can't be having people thinking, "I have a right and a duty to say it as it is." You've got to have people thinking, "I have the right to sit in my brand new bought-on-credit sofa, in my IKEA-decorated bought-on-credit room, in my bought-on-credit house, with my wallet full of credit cards, and watch American Idol. Oh, and phone up and probably pay for my phone bill on credit to vote on American Idol." And that's what they want you doing. They don't want you out there thinking. They don't want you talking to your neighbors. Why have they destroyed the family? I mean, in the 60s, 96% of black children were legitimate as regards the government's view of legitimacy. And now it's the other way around. It's 94 or 96% are illegitimate. Why? Did that just happen? Of course it didn't. It was social engineering. And why is it now in some cities that the same proportions of white families are having illegitimate children, especially poor areas, because they want people's families broken up? Because if you can sit and talk to your family member and say, "Oh, my life's rough, I hate the way my job is treating me, and everything's falling apart," and then your family member says, "Oh, the same thing was being said to me by somebody from somewhere else that I talk to a lot," and then people would start to communicate.
So is the religious right, the religion industry, whatever we care to call it, are they willing participants in this, do you think, Andy, or are they... Are they just cannon fodder and well-intentioned idiots?
Well, most of them are cannon fodder and well-intentioned idiots. The guys who are running it are making out like bandits. They're well in on the deal. I mean,
that's who I'm talking about. The Falwells, the Dobsons, the Robertsons.
Where did they get the money to build super churches from? Where did they get the money to run these TV stations to begin with? They got the money off the rich, because the rich know that giving these types of money will get them on side. I mean, they're totally...
Well, and they also and they also know that the debts will always be paid, because these poor these poor people go at a dollar at a time, $5 bill at a time, into the collection plate every Sunday.
Yeah, and...
All of it tax-free.
Yeah, yeah. And these guys will make out like bandits, and the super rich don't even really care whether they get that money back. How much does it cost for a TV station for a couple of years for someone like the Rockefellers? No, yeah, it's irrelevant. But the fact that it keeps an entire segment of the population at the throats of everyone who's, like, you know, not following their God, that's perfect. I mean, you know, the Rockefellers openly admit to financing the women's liberation movement. After they'd resisted it for as long as possible, they realized it was unstoppable, so they subverted it. They created radical feminism, completely created it, and paid for the core members to do their thing.
And some people might argue that this is conspiracy theory, but you can see it going back as far as the FDR administration in terms of, well, you know, the question was put the other night, who invented Social Security, who invented workers' comp, and the answer I was given was, you know, the Chancellor Hindenburg.
Mm.
And there's some truth in that. But in the United States, the idea of a social safety net, of people getting a check from the government, was the creature of Huey P. Long.
Right.
And his was a much more radical view, and so it was co-opted by FDR and significantly watered down. Now, that's not to say it's a bad thing, but that seems to be part of the process in this country, that good ideas are never allowed to flourish on their own.
No, they're always subverted to serve the interest of the ruling class. Everything is always subverted to serve the interest of the ruling class. If they hate it, they'll try and suppress it. When they find they can't suppress it, then they'll subvert it. And that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it's going to be until we finally get rid of them.
I fear there's a great deal of correct in what you offer.
Yeah,
Andy.
Sorry, man, but it's all right. You know what I mean?
But you know, when does it?
Hell.
You know, I don't think it happens day after tomorrow.
No. I mean, it could do if they push it. I mean, when they push it too far, that's when it happens, and that could really happen at any time. But you know, I mean, that could happen because they make a mistake and China goes, right, that's it. We're having it. We're having all the debts back. U.S. is now broke. We're in control of the world, and then it's all over for them. Because they'll get lynched by the less rich that go, hang on, you were supposed to be sorting this out for us.
Well, I see some of this as a function of the well-being of the American worker.
Well, yeah, I mean, the American worker's well-being is diametrically opposed to the interests of the ruling class. Because the well-being of the American worker basically says the American worker should get a fair shake, so that worker, male or female, can support their family. So you have one person looking after the kids, so the kids don't grow up dysfunctional, and the other person earning a wage. I saw.
You know, it's interesting. You know, well, everything. The way these conversations always work, Andy.
Yeah.
I saw something the other day. I just logged on and, you know, popped by MSNBC or something, and there was an article there saying, "Don't hate the super rich," literally, because the super rich are going to save the world from global recession by virtue of the obscene amounts of money they spend.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right.
And, you know, it was one of those Elvis gun moments.
Well, when all the money simply disappears in a puff of electronic smoke, then, yeah, let's see them spend their way out of that one. Mm-hmm. Wait for one of them to come and barter at the local farmer's market, see if they make it out alive in their big four-wheel drive SUV.
But what sort of shocked me, Andy, was to see the propaganda put out there so overtly.
Yeah, well, they're getting desperate. They are actually getting desperate because they can see the polls. Yeah, they might not show the polls on TV, but the polls go to them pretty much straight away. You know, one of the top mail lists from the polling companies will be a company that hands stuff directly to the intelligence agencies of these families. And you better believe these families have intelligence agencies.
Sure they do.
I mean, they own the CIA for a start, but, you know, they have their own private security. And they know the polls. They know that 80-90% of the American people now think they're getting screwed and hate the government and just want it all to end. And so they're getting desperate. They have to start shoving it out more and more and more. And remember, the religion industry are a very small, probably only 5 or 6% of your population if you put them all together. So the vast majority of you will just snuff the religion industry out when the revolution comes, like a candle. There's,
well, in order for them to be 20, we have to consider that that terrifying values voter block was in 2004 said to be something like 20% of the electorate that came out. If you look at the people who come out for an American election...
It's the ones who come out that count, but I mean, I'm talking about when you talk about the population in general.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you is it still extrapolating if you go downward with it? Then you find out what a tiny, itsy-bitsy, little tiny group that they are.
Yeah.
It's their willingness to stand and scream that makes them seem so terrifying.
When it all gets pushed over the edge, that all becomes irrelevant because the whole voting system becomes irrelevant. But I mean, it's easily arguable that they've only been used to keep you distracted from the fact that your votes have been stolen anyway in all the last elections. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the ruling class are so sure that they can't win elections now that they have had to institute this electronic voting thing, and they had to steal the last two presidential elections. And even with all their attempts, they were unable to steal the last midterm election.
And yet, if you read, I know, for instance, Brad Friedman over at BradBlog does a tremendous job following the electronic voting stuff.
Yeah, he's really good.
And one of the things he pointed out was the allegation, and it really didn't get a lot of noise made about it, that they still stole the election.
Hmm.
They just didn't steal it well enough. Because what was it, Florida's 13th district, I believe it was, that sort of thing was repeated all over the country. And had the actual votes been counted, you probably couldn't get enough of a Republican caucus together to turn over an old VW microbus.
Oh, no, the election went like 90-95% for the Democrats, I'm sure of that. But that's because the voting machines controlled it, so it went about 50.5% in the end. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in the next election, they'll manage to do the same thing again. I think they've sussed that they can't win outright all the time now.
Oh, that's why I started the program the way that I did, Andy. They know that there is going to be a Democrat in the White House in 2008.
Oh, yeah, but they're hoping it'll be Hillary because she's a bought and paid for member of the ruling class.
But whoever it is, they have already, primarily we're talking about Republicans at this point, they have already made a determination that their job is to hamstring whoever that is to make sure that any just in case you do get a reformer in there, just in case you do get somebody in there that's interested in innovation, that they don't have a prayer.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, look, the Democratic Leadership Council and the Republican National Congress, or wherever they are, they're the one and the same, okay? Like Ron Paul says, there's only two problems in Washington, that's the Republicans and the Democrats. And he's true to a degree. There are nice Democrats out there. There are really good, hard-working ones, and there's even a couple of independents, I believe, between the two houses, and they're pretty much, you know, left of the Democratic Party. The problem is the leadership of the Democrats, because they're bought and paid for members of the ruling class that will betray you and me just as quickly as a Republican would. I mean, Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Do I need to say any more?
No. I get it. For all the grief that she has taken over having worn a headscarf in Syria, even Nancy Pelosi has issues because, among other things, it's my understanding that they run a hotel out in maybe the wine country of California where they do everything humanly possible to keep the union out.
Yeah.
That's a Democrat.
Well, you know, Nancy Pelosi, I haven't trusted from the moment I saw her. She looks too well manicured and well presented. That's the mark of these people. PR is all to them. And, you know, I couldn't trust her because she just looks too slick in an oily way. Do you know what I mean? And she does. And she has the same look about her as...
somewhere along the way, Andy, I hate to call it a deal with the devil, but it's kind of what it is. We are constantly, by virtue of the way the system is set up here, forced to choose the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, well, you do. You choose the lesser of two evils, and then as soon as they've won the elections, you get the same number of people that you had beforehand, like, organizing, hundreds of thousands, to write identical letters saying, okay, we've elected you, now you've got 2 months to show us the goods, or we're having a recall election, and you're out.
Would that it were that way.
Well, it can be. It's up to you.
Not on a federal level. it's a matter of referendum and recall is generally held as being a matter for the individual states.
For not doing their job, you know, whatever it takes, man. Just you can take them out. You can start impeachment proceedings the day the president gets elected.
I was having a conversation with, and it wasn't on the air, with Mark Levine, our good friend from the Radio Inside Scoop the other night, and I was talking about, you know, what a hardcore left-wing, rabid, frothing-at-the-mouth liberal I apparently am, and he said, well, why do you describe that? Well, I said, you know, I want everybody to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get this filthy, filthy money, not just, you know, not just Exxon's filthy money, but my filthy money, too. Out of our political process. I don't want money to be able to buy a political position. I want that done. But if you take positions like that and you put them out there for the so-called mainstream American voter, that, you know, for some reason or other, that is defined, and it's done because of the way the media is set up. That is defined as being incredibly right next to calling for the revolution of the proletariat.
Yeah, well, you know, ignore the media. Stuff them. They haven't done their job. Move on. We've got the internet now, and even if they privatize that, we've got Wi-Fi networks. Stuff them. Let's move on. We don't need these people anymore, Bob. Seriously. We don't need them. We don't need their stupid systems. We don't need their sick fantasies of greed and world control. We don't need them spraying weird chemicals in the air to see what happens. We don't need, have you heard, nanotechnology getting loose? Have you heard about this?
I've read a little bit about it, as well as the RFID stuff.
Damn scary. If it's
sure
right.
It is. Well, look, the, you know, I mentioned, a week and a half ago, the poisoned wheat gluten that went into the pet food may very well be in the human food supply as well, because it was sold as food grade. We've given the corporatists, they're communists at this point, because it's turning into a demand economy, and the demand is that you sods will buy this stuff whether you like it or not, because it's all that's going to be on the market, and it's being passed off as a free market. But
that's what a free market is. It's you're free to buy whatever they tell you to.
So as a consequence, we're in a position where we're getting poisoned.
Yeah, we've been polluted, we're being poisoned. I mean, mercury in vaccines, because it helps preserve them.
Well, one dirty load of spinach poisoned a country.
Yeah, look, Bob, here's the thing. These poisons are a problem, but they're just like inadequacies in the food control agency, and whatever you call them, food standards over here. That's just inadequacies in the fact that, you know, George Bush has cut off all the money. The real problem isn't from those things. It's from people like Monsanto, who have released a special super-resistant type of wheat. And it has a special geno adaption that puts bacteria into the genotype of the wheat that makes it resistant to other mold, bacteria, even insects.
Well, they did the same thing with potatoes.
Well, no, this is the thing with wheat. This has got into almost all wheat all worldwide, okay? And what it does is, because of the adaption in the genotype, it adapts the bacteria and it lets it adapt other bacteria that can then get through the protective lining of your stomach. And so we can now be poisoned by our own bacteria in our stomachs if we have too much of this stuff. And it's happening all over the world, especially in Iraq, where it's now law to plant only
that you, yeah, that they, yeah, they, very few people know that sort of thing, that they codified what could and couldn't be planted. Probably the greatest threat, though, to the American to the world food supply, again, coming from Monsanto, Archer Daniels, Midland, that crowd, mostly Monsanto, are these things like Roundup Ready corn.
Mm.
Because the cradle of corn is in Mexico, and what they're finding is that as far away as the isolated, non-hybridized heirloom varieties of corn, some of these filthy Monsanto genes are already showing up in it, and it's not even planted nearby.
No, that's what I mean.
And it can bring on starvation. Yeah, it can bring on starvation. One screw up.
Yeah, well, I mean, this stuff is literally going to kill human beings in their millions, and that was probably what the intention was. And it's going to be a cumulative process, because it takes time for it to work on you. It's like eating mercury every day, like you Americans do pretty much every day.
Don't forget the rocket fuel.
Well, you eat radiation, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they dilute it, but do you know what happens with radiation if it's diluted and then you eat them?
It builds up just the same.
Hmm?
It builds up just the same.
Yeah, it recombines. in your liver and in your kidney, and you end up with...
Yeah, I've got... this is another one of those stories I didn't get to last week. I'm sitting here looking at the headline from the Associated Press. U.S. seeks to ease irradiated food label.
Yeah, well, they've done it. They've just seek to ease it. They've already done it in the United States. They want to get it done worldwide.
And so, you know, that brilliant process that was discovered by Louis Pasteur will now be subverted and perverted, and products zapped with radiation will now be allowed to be labeled pasteurized.
Yep. And they don't even have to label them that, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, back in my brewing days, I understood that pasteurization, you know, because I would pasteurize my homebrew. I had to raise the brew to 180 degrees for 20 minutes. And at that point, it would be microbially safe.
Yeah. Well, now they just nuke it. And you know why? Because it's yet another way for the U.S. nuclear industry to get rid of its waste on the cheap. In fact, they can get paid for it.
God.
Just like they get paid for it by the U.S. military through all those big arms corporations making those depleted uranium rounds that are poisoning me and everyone else in Europe right now, because they're poisoning everyone in Iraq as well.
Because it aerosolizes and picks up on the wind. And yeah. I know. Andy, I got to roll along. We're at the top of the hour.
Cool. Well, you take care.
And Agnes says hey to Hazel.
Thank you, man. I'll pass on the message when she wakes up tomorrow. And I'll speak to y'all soon.
All right, you take care.
Take care, man.
Bye now.
Bye, mate.
Okay, coming up after the top of the hour, a conversation with Dennis Yedwab, senior advisor at Media Matters for America, the IMUS business. Some breaking news on the IMUS story. We'll talk about it on the other side of the news. This is America's liberal voice. You know that. This is The Horn, the head-on radio network. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Dead is blown across the ocean. Leaving just a memory. A snapshot in the family album. Daddy, what else did you leave for me?
This is the Quality News Network. Iran has announced it is increasing production of enriched uranium, which is in direct defiance of a UN sanction resolution, which demands halting the program. The enriched uranium can be used for either nuclear power or a nuclear weapons program. In Tehran, the chief nuclear envoy today said his country is ready to engage in serious negotiations on its program. The West insists Iran prove its aims are peaceful before the country is allowed to continue with any nuclear development.
In Seoul, an American delegation was told UN inspectors could be permitted to visit North Korea's nuclear facilities as soon as the U.S. returns $25 million in North Korean funds frozen in a Macau bank. A February agreement calls on Pyongyang to shut down its main reactor by Saturday. Some 13,000 National Guard troops are receiving alert orders for possible deployment to Iraq. For many, this will be a second tour. One unit could be shipped out in December. The final decision on the troop deployment will depend on the situation in Iraq. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Shia marched through the two holy cities to commemorate the fall of Baghdad 4 years ago and also to demand the U.S. occupiers leave Iraq. Radical Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr ordered the march. To head off any violence in Baghdad, Iraq's generals tightened security, imposing a 24-hour ban on all vehicles inside the capital city. The Pentagon announced 10 U.S. soldiers were killed over the weekend in Iraq. British military officials placed a ban on all future military interviews with the media for payment. The decision means 15 British Marines and sailors held hostage by Iran will not be able to sell their stories. And in East Timor, residents are voting for the first time since they won an independence from Indonesia 5 years ago. They're voting for a president. President Bush is in the Southwest lobbying for a new guest worker program for illegal immigrants. The president is calling for an immigration pact with Congress no later than August. And the U.S. Senate focuses this week on stem cell legislation, considering two bills on the issue. President Bush vetoed a stem cell measure last year. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A bald eagle egg hatched on Santa Catalina Island over the holiday weekend. It is the third time one of the endangered birds has hatched on the island since toxic chemicals wiped out the species there in the 1940s. And patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, may cut their risk of lung cancer by 60% if they regularly use high-dose inhaled corticosteroids. That's according to a recently released study of U.S. veterans. Russia will soon have a system in place to compete with the U.S. GPS satellite navigation system. Using Cold War-era military technology, Russia will launch its own version next year called GLONASS, or Global Navigation Satellite System. Billionaire space tourist Charles Simonyi and two crew are now on board the International Space Station. Simonyi will spend 10 days at the outpost. The White House says it will take formal legal action in the World Trade Organization this week against China. The U.S. is accusing China of unfair trade practices for its policy of pirating American music, software, and films. Job growth rose more than expected in March, according to the Labor Department. 180,000 non-farm jobs were added to the nation's payrolls. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.51. The Dow was up 9 points today. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5 and a half past the hour. Oh, we've got another great hour of conversation coming. If you're on hold, we'll come to you shortly after our discussion with Dennis Yedwab. He's a senior advisor for Media Matters for America. He'll be joining us momentarily. As I mentioned to you going into the break, there is a development in the Don Imus story. His show has been suspended for 2 weeks by NBC News and CBS Radio. Unfortunately, this isn't the victory that it looks like. I've got a press release here from Carl Frisch at Media Matters for America, who notes, "This appears to be nothing more than an effort by NBC News and CBS Radio to make the controversy go away. They must take responsibility for continuing to air Don Imus after years of similarly bigoted language." Dennis Yedwab is on the line with us. Mr. Yedwab, thank you for taking time to talk with us. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Now, I mentioned this breaking news with regard to Imus and Mr. Frisch's press release regarding it. This really is lipstick on a pig, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is an attempt by CBS and by MSNBC to just say, hey, all right, we did something. I think it's what's interesting about it is that we can contrast this with what happened when Michael Savage, you know, another right-wing talk show host prone to outrageous, racist, homophobic statements, had an MSNBC show in 2003, and he made similar statements, he made homophobic statements, and they fired him. So in this case, obviously, something is keeping Don Imus on the air in a way that Michael Savage, they were felt free to fire.
Is it safe to say that maybe what's keeping Imus on the air is sort of green in color, flat, rectangular, fits in a wallet nicely? because, you know, Savage's show, and nobody loathes Michael Savage more than I do. Back when I was on terrestrial radio, I got bumped off the air to do a rerun of Savage. So, you know, trust me. But Savage was floundering. Yeah. It was a new show. It was a no-brainer to get rid of him because it wasn't doing anything for the network.
Sure.
I would imagine that the ratings numbers are considerably higher at MSNBC for Don Imus, are they not?
I'm sure they are. I don't know what the numbers are, but I will say that one of the things about this, I'm sure that money played a big role in this, particularly the radio numbers. Don Imus is syndicated on 70 stations throughout the country.
Right.
But there's another point here, and that's that Don Imus, ironically enough, is a prestige show for both MSNBC and for CBS Radio. Every week, if you turn on Imus in the morning, you'll hear, you know, the biggies of Washington journalism, Tim Russert, David Gregory, Chris Matthews, Andrea Mitchell. You'll hear politicians like John McCain. They go on all the time.
Sure.
This is not just about, you know, Imus makes money. He is validated by the political and media elites in Washington. So it's a much bigger deal.
Well, I've come to the conclusion that, you know, and like my conclusion matters, but I've come to the conclusion that it's time for him to go.
Yeah, I think,
you know, go live on the ranch, do what you're doing, be happy, you know, I don't care. But his day is, and I'm disturbed when I come to that feeling, though, Mr. Yedwab, because I don't want to live in a world or in an America where we just run people off the air willy-nilly. But
no, I agree with that. I think one of the things that's really interesting about this whole dust-up, I mean, this was the lead story. I was watching NBC News earlier. This was the lead story on NBC News tonight. But Don Imus has been saying this stuff for a very long time.
If Precisely.
If you go to our website, mediamatters.org, you'll see that this isn't the first time Don Imus has said something like this. This isn't even the first time that MSNBC has apologized for Don Imus saying something like this. Lisa DeMoraes, who's the TV columnist for the Washington Post, did an article on Saturday where she pointed out that at least two other times in the past couple of years, MSNBC has apologized for something Imus had said on the air, in exactly the same way that they originally apologized for his statements here. So it's interesting that, you know, finally someone says, well, you know, perhaps there should be some standards here. Perhaps he shouldn't be saying this stuff.
I think, I don't know who else covered it, but Media Matters is, for me, a tremendous resource. And I tried to do a little so-called dot connecting last Friday night because, you know, you can play the that disgusting comment that he made about the Rutgers basketball team.
Right.
And it's easy to say, well, you know, he's a shock jock. He's over the top. You know, it's his job to push the envelope, blah, 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 blah. But then if you go back and you play the exchange where he calls Hillary Clinton or you know, one of his team calls Hillary Clinton a bitch.
Right.
Says that she's going to be giving gang signs.
Right.
That she's going to be she's going to have gold teeth and dreadlock cornrows. I'm sorry. And then, you know, and you take another step backward and there's comments about telling Bill Richardson to kiss his butt.
Yep.
And you guys have done a wonderful job of cataloging all this stuff.
Right.
This didn't happen in a vacuum. This isn't just about the Rutgers women's basketball team. This man has openly called for a nuclear device to be dropped on the Palestinian territories.
That's right.
That is a call to genocide.
That's right. And that's one of the things that as you know, when we look at the media environment, it's like, again, he has been legitimized, not just by, I mean, yeah, you know, we shouldn't be running people off the radio. I agree with that. But then again, the most important journalist in Washington and the most important politician in Washington shouldn't be running onto a show to a guy who is repeatedly, you know, made racist comments, made homophobic comments, made anti-Hispanic comments, made anti-gay comments, made anti-women comments. They shouldn't, I mean.
You legitimize it.
Absolutely.
Now, the next question I have to ask, and it's one that I think that the audience here at the Horn would be very interested in an answer to. Have you guys done any sort of research into the sponsorship base for this program?
We're obviously it's something we're working on, but it's not something you can do right away. But yeah, it's, you know, that I think is the next step to go to, is we have to say to the sponsors, hey, look, you know, you guys are legitimizing this too. You know, it's not just Tim Russert, it's not just David Gregory, it's not just GE who owns MSNBC, who owns NBC, it's not just CBS Radio, it's the people who advertise on there. And I think that's the next step to...
Because, there are a lot more decent people in this country than there are people who sit there and go, oh, that IMUS, he sure is edgy.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's exactly right. And the thing is, it takes away from... you know, the legitimate public discourse that goes on.
Right. Do we want to? The question is, you know, if I go out and I'm sort of just pulling a rabbit out of the hat on this one, but say that Tide detergent or Colgate Palmolive or somebody advertises on IMUS. If I pick up a Colgate Palmolive product, do I really want to be subsidizing that kind of bigoted, racist, prejudicial speech?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because early at the end of last year. We at Media Matters had gotten a hold of a memo by, I believe, ABC Radio about advertisers that would not advertise on Air America.
I remember that very well.
And so they're clearly corporate, you know, corporations that advertise clearly understand the problem of what they consider controversial. The problem is that Air America and Errol Flankin is controversial, but Don Imus isn't. And I think one of the things that this controversy does is it brings this brings us to the point where we can say this level of discourse is not acceptable in mainstream politics, in the mainstream media.
So, you know, as a function of the, and you know this and you've opened the door. Can I just call you Dennis?
Sure, absolutely,
you know, Dennis. You've opened the door here on another entire facet of this problem.
Yeah.
And that is the double standard to which liberal talk is mm-hmm. held versus so-called, you know, how can you call it conservative? I mean,
yeah.
My God.
It's not, you know, there's outrageous stuff that goes on. I think one of the things that we at Media Matters have done a lot this year is that we have talked about how a lot of hate mongers on the right have been legitimized by being given legitimate positions or legitimate authority on mainstream media.
What in God's name is Glenn Beck doing on Headline News?
Glenn Beck is another. He's a great example. Glenn Beck, who accused the first Muslim elected to Congress of being a terrorist, basically.
Yeah.
Being a traitor to America. But
we ran it. We ran it on the program, sure.
Yeah, he is on CNN Headline News. And he's a commentator on Good Morning America.
Forgot about that. Yep.
You know, so, I mean, it's, you know, another example of this is William Bennett, excuse me, last year had made comments about crime rate, abortion, and African American.
Oh, God, yes.
Right after those comments, he was signed as a CNN commentator. So apparently there's no consequence for this kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things that we as progressives need to look into, is making sure that there are consequences when stuff like this happens.
Well, the right wing is very good at those consequences, Dennis, because, I mean, like I said, you know, granted, it's a little tiny station in West Virginia, but I've experienced this kind of stuff. I referred to State Farm Insurance on the air one evening, because I don't like insurance companies.
Sure.
I referred to generically Snake Farm and Allsnake. I got called in on the carpet the next morning because the phones had been ringing off the hook.
Sure.
So, you know, oh no, you know, and so, you know, there was that double standard. Meanwhile, there was a right winger on, in the mornings, if a labor union came up, he would call them a bunch of knee busting thugs.
Yep.
Criminals, you know, organized labor owned by the organized crime, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know the drill.
Yeah.
And nothing would be said.
That's exactly right. And I think that, I mean, and this goes on the national scale. Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly had appeared on the Today program four or five times last year. Bill O'Reilly's not an NBC News personality.
No, he's from the other side.
He's from the other side. But they had him on, and sometimes it was to promote his book, but sometimes it was just to comment on current events. Well, forgive me if, you know, MSNBC has a guy whose show runs at the same time as Bill O'Reilly,
who is more than capable of commenting on current events.
Exactly. And we're obviously referring to Keith Olbermann.
Sure.
And it's like, it is incomprehensible to me as a citizen that these guys are legitimized, but, you know, liberals are demonized.
Right, and see, you know, it goes to people like Giuliani, it goes to people like McCain, it goes to people like David Gregory. At what point, or Chris Matthews, you know,
right.
God knows Olbermann's never on IMUS, is he?
No. I don't think so.
I never that I'm aware of. But you, and probably because Olbermann will not legitimize him.
Right.
How do you get to these guys? At what point, you know, do you stand up in a press conference and just pray for a responsible journalist who will say, why do you legitimize these comments, and at least make them step back from them?
Well, I think this goes to a larger question about what is coming out as the emerging progressive infrastructure. The conservatives have been beating up on the media for 40 years, even more than that. But they've had organizations to do it for 40 years. And they've integrated it, and they
understand. And they built those organizations, Dennis. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, they built, and it's taken a longer time for progressives to build organizations like Media Matters, Progressive Radio,
mm-hmm.
the blogosphere, other great organizations like CRU or Center for American Progress, groups like that, to sort of fight back against what David Brock, the president of Media Matters, calls the right-wing Republican noise machine. They've been building these institutions for 40 years, and they've integrated it into how they do politics. And right now what we as progressives are doing is we're building those organizations too, so we can fight back.
It doesn't happen overnight, of course. You know, the right-wing machine, the noise machine, the whatever, that got started election night 1964.
Yeah.
So as a consequence of that, we on our side have to be somewhat patient, but we also have a teaching job ahead of us, do we not, Dennis?
I think that's exactly right. I think a lot of people don't understand what we're up against.
Because among other things, if you find one, and you know, we are independent here at the Head On Radio Network.
Sure.
We operate on the internet because it's the biggest potential market in the world.
That's right.
And we don't have to fool with right-wing freaks at the FCC.
Sure.
But by the same token, we also, you know, we knock on doors, we try to keep the lights on, that kind of thing. And we have people, you know, we hear things like, talk radio is a Republican thing. Talk radio is a right-wing thing. And it's almost like these people want to cede the battleground.
Yeah, and that's I think that, you know, there is a the greatest electoral success the Democrats have had in the last 20 years were Bill Clinton's elections and in the 2006 elections. And both of those had one fundamental theme going on, which was they didn't let attacks lie unresponded to. And that's important for progressives to understand, that in order to respond when we're being hit, we need to take over, we need to hit back everywhere. We need to have the counter to them. We need to have Media Matters. We need to have Head On Radio. We need to have
Air America, Nova M.
We need to have the blogosphere.
Right.
And we need to figure out how to use it well so that we can combat these things. I mean, one of the things about this Imus thing is we've talked about, Don Imus has been saying stuff like this for years, if not decades. But for the first time, this has become a big story that has penetrated into, you know, the national media. It was on ESPN today, Don Imus' comments. And that's because there's progressive radio, and there's Media Matters, and there's the blogosphere, and there's other groups that are creating our own echo chamber, our own place where we can say, you know,
and you can and we can coordinate a message.
That's exactly right.
Now, I guess the question becomes one of will CBS Radio and will MSNBC succeed by suspending the show for 2 weeks?
You know,
will they make it go off the radar? Will they make it lose its legs?
You know, I think that one of the things about this controversy, because of who's gotten involved in it, I don't think it will. For example, among the other developments is, you know, the athletic director of Rutgers, you know, Imus went on the radio today and said, I want to apologize to the women on the Rutgers basketball team. And the athletic director of Rutgers said, well, it's their choice if they want to meet with you or not. Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson have been involved in this. You know, there are more people in this than, you know, so a 2 weeks, I mean, I can't imagine that they're not looking at this and saying, well, a 2 week suspension of the simulcast certainly doesn't seem to be a real.
And what goes in those slots? Reruns?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a suspension. If they're just rerunning old Imus programs, it's a non-suspension suspension, isn't it, Dennis?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Because the current, I mean, if I understand the business end of it enough, even if it's a rerun, you're still fulfilling your ad contracts by dropping current ads in those avails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I think that the key question is like this is an attempt to say we're doing something big when you're really not, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I think and about the women on that basketball team. And you know what? The one thing I would like to hear that I haven't heard enough of, I'd like one of the absolute class acts of college athletics, period, let alone women's college athletics, is Pat Summitt down at the University of Tennessee.
Yeah.
I would love to hear her chime in on this. That woman has won more basketball games than most basketball coaches have even coached.
That's right, and you know she and the Rutgers coach, C. Vivian Stringer, who's another Hall of Famer, are best friends.
Yeah,
they've you know they hang out together.
Because I can't imagine I've got three daughters.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what it would be, because we work with them, and you know, maybe they'll play sports, maybe they'll be at, but to hear some ex-junkie punk refer to my daughter as a nappy-headed hoe.
Yeah.
You know, they don't build a ball bat big enough, and I'm sorry, that's just me being, I guess, intolerant of intolerance.
Yeah, but you know, Michael Wilbon, who's the Washington Post columnist and also ESPN host, works on ABC, big sports columnist, in an online chat today, he was talking about this, and he was asked, he's like, look, he has a free speech to say whatever he wants, and I have the free speech to tell him to go stick it, and he's been saying this for a really long time. This isn't new. He stereotypes people. What he does.
Can I address one other thing with you real quick, Dennis?
Absolutely.
Because you just sort of, you know, with the iceberg. The free speech issue drives me nuts, because I do listen to right-wing talk and everything, and I've heard a lot of this. I've heard the following. there, I'm sick of the political correctness in America where a man can't speak his mind like Dunn Amos done did. At some point, how do we educate the American people, for instance, that it is not that Don Imus has no right of free speech vis-a-vis his corporation,
right,
or his listenership? Free speech speaks to the right of the government to come in and suppress his speech.
Right, and that is really the big. It's like, and I make it even, you know, when I talk about it to people, I say Don Imus has every right to say what he wants to say, but he doesn't have to get paid by CBS Radio and MSNBC to say it.
Or by us.
Right, or by us. Nobody has to pay him to say that. It's like that. It's the same thing we've had with Ann Coulter and her column. It's like Ann Coulter has every right to, you know, call for us to invade every Muslim country and convert everyone to Christianity. She doesn't have to get paid by a syndicate to write her column.
Or, as I noted when she made the comment at CPAC,
right,
about John Edwards, you know, I expect her to talk that kind of garbage. She,
right,
opens up her mouth. I expect bats to fly out. She's Ann Coulter. It's what she does.
Right.
But when I played that clip, Dennis, what I focused on was not her comments, but what happens after she says it. And
that's
it's
right.
All those Republicans, all those conservatives. First, it's a little wave of nervous titters, and then a couple of ha-ha, and did she really say that? And then the room erupts in raucous laughter.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, she did it. No, we have a right not to put up with it and not to endorse it.
Right.
And frankly, we also have a right to think and speak about the really poor character of the people who do endorse it.
Exactly. I mean, for example, when Ann Coulter, during that speech at CPAC, she was introduced by presidential candidate Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain this afternoon was asked about Don Imus's comments, and he was like, well, he's apologized, you know.
That's all you got to do.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, one of the ways to hold Don Imus accountable is to hold the people who like to go on Imus accountable. One of the ways to hold Ann Coulter accountable is to hold the people who want to be associated with Ann Coulter accountable. It's like, you know, this isn't, I mean, I hate to make this argument, but, you know, the conservatives have spent years demonizing many great liberal groups and great liberal people. It's like they've been able to do it, and the mainstream media has gone along.
Well, they've made an entire industry, you know, regardless of whether she's liberal or progressive enough to suit some of us, they've made an entire industry out of demonizing Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
For being Hillary Clinton.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, not because, and you can see it. It's not so much on policy. It's because they hate her, and there's a really sick level of misogyny apparent in it.
Yes. Absolutely.
And they are actively engaged in hating Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not for his policies. He hasn't been in the Senate long enough to have any policies. They are busy hating Barack Obama for having the temerity to be politically active, politically powerful, politically engaging, and black.
Yep. And I think that and one of the things that, again, we as progressives have to understand is that, you know, whatever we can do, what we're not trying to do is silence Ann Coulter or Don Imus. What we're trying to do is make it so that people don't want to be associated with them.
Right, and at some point you have to call those people's audience out, whether
right.
it's Imus or Coulter or Michelle Malkin, Dennis Prager, Glenn Beck,
mm-hmm.
Hugh Hewitt. You've got to call their audience out and say, look, this is how these people are. Are you willing to be associated with them and have their hateful nature transposed onto you legitimately by your support thereof?
Yes. And that's, I think, one of the things that we at Media Matters get. We get questioned a lot about, you know, our mission is to correct conservative misinformation in the media. And sometimes I get questions about why we put up the crazy clips from Don Imus and from Glenn Beck and from Bill O'Reilly and Michelle Malkin. And I say, what is important is we need to show who the people who are important right-wing voices are, who are legitimated by them, and make what they say toxic.
Yeah, so
that people don't want to be associated with it.
Yeah, this isn't about trying to silence, you know, the other side. We can have day-long, week-long, year-long policy debates.
Right.
But, you know, you can't have that debate. You cannot have legitimate debates about the body politic in the United States if on our side we say, well, you know, we need universal health care because every working family deserves to be able to go to the doctor and catastrophic illness ought not destroy a family, blah, 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 blah. And Ann Coulter stands up and says, faggot.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll never have that, and they know we'll never have that debate.
That's exactly right.
It's got to be countered. So, you know, let me say, Dennis, that... I'm a Media Matters junkie.
Oh, we appreciate that.
I'm there day in and day out, and small operation that we are. I can't do what you guys do. I can't listen to Savage. God, I'd be on medication
yeah.
if I did. Or Limbaugh, or Coulter, or Beck. And you guys are there.
Well, to borrow a phrase from our friends at Newshounds, we listen to all that stuff so you don't have to.
Exactly. I tell you what, Dennis Yedwab, this has been just a wonderful conversation. I thank you for coming on at such late notice, and I hope you know that you will always be welcome here.
Anytime.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye now. Dennis Yedwab, senior advisor at Media Matters for America. These guys are on the ball. Now, the question is, and you know, it's a question that every liberal website, every progressive blog, every progressive liberal broadcast operation has to answer, and that is, will you guys get behind it? Will you guys support it? They're giving you, we're giving you, the information to go out and fight the fight. This isn't, you know, this isn't done because somebody, you know, because it beats the hell out of sniffing burlap. This is important. But it's only viable, it's only valuable if you take the information that is legitimately, conscientiously provided and act on that information. Who advertises, and they're working on it, who advertises on Don Imus? How many times have liberal talkers, liberal progressive conversation hosts been run off the air for absolutely no...
Yeah, he's un-American.
Yeah, how... you know what I mean. The right wing is very good at this. At what point do we become good at this? At what point do we demand a civil... discussion, a civil conversation in this country, because it may very well be that the republic depends on our ability to do it. You know? We'll be back with your phone calls. This is The Horn.
I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to NAJA.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Track to John Kuntz's new album, It Can Never Happen Here. Yeah, it can. John will be joining us Wednesday evening in the second hour of the program. I'm really looking forward to it. Awesome new work. And you haven't even heard the one that really drives the nail, but you will. You will. And I got another one that's going to bring a smile to your face, too. So I hope you'll be listening Wednesday evening when we talk to John Kuntz. Portland's own John Kuntz. Right. 20 minutes before the hour, and we go to our new good buddy, Jurassic Pork, JP, from Welcome to Pottersville. You there, JP? 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 Okay. You there? Okay. put JP back on hold and go to Ed. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've listened to a lot of the talk that's going on here, and I'm in agreement that people in leadership positions should not do what, and I haven't actually heard the comments, but I know what the guy is from just listening to a little bit of him before, and I'm not for him at all. He's not a whole lot better than Rush Limbaugh and that group. But as far as Jesse Jackson and what he says, it don't mean a hill of beans to me, because his lifestyle at the Playboy Club and getting some other woman pregnant during his marriage, I'm not impressed by any of his character. He don't have a character. So, but now Al Sharpton, I have a high regard for him. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these people that talk this stuff that I've heard tonight is really out of touch. They don't know what the parents are, don't correct their kids from going to school and doing this name calling. The schools won't correct it. I got a friend that his sister is a teacher, and he said they won't even let them bring up a racial problem in the school. So as you got that and they're not dealing with it, what do we expect to come of as we get out, get these people, and these people went to these same schools we're talking about?
Well, what you've got, especially with these children, Ed, is a situation in which the school systems have been under attack since the first minute George Bush got into office. And as a consequence of that, you've got decisions being made not to rely on counselors, not to rely on teachers, but just to just to literally give up and call the cops.
Yeah.
Well, what adult can't deal with a 5 or a 6 year old by simply restraining them?
And this goes farther than that. I have a grandbaby that played soccer, and it's a black and white situation, and it's not going to get cleared up because Jesse Jackson wants to.
Well, you know, Jesse Jackson's not my leader or your leader or my representative or your representative. But Ed, it's really not for you or me to declare whether or not he is or isn't legitimate. Whether he does or doesn't do anything where we're concerned, he does try to speak out for another sector of society. If he lacks credibility, then eventually he'll disappear. But he is still clothed with credibility, as is Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton had a lot to do with the Tawana Brawley fraud. But he went on in the 2004 election cycle, if you listen to him, to say a lot of stuff that was really, really trenchant and really, really accurate and really, really needed to be said, whether it was a trade issue or most particularly the war in Iraq. Nobody spoke to the war in Iraq and what so-called free trade was doing to this country like Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton did.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that, but Jesse Jackson is just, at one time I would have voted for him for president, but that is a long way from where I am with him and his kind now. But like I said, the problem goes back to the parents at home, for the blacks and the whites both, teaching respect, and this is no worse than the blacks calling us spooks, ghosts, crackers. This name-calling stuff is a bunch of garbage.
Well, that's
and it needs to be corrected at home, you know. And if one of mine would do it, they'd get a fat lip.
Well, can you imagine, Ed, what would happen to, say, I mean, let's assume for a minute that I was on terrestrial radio, you know, and heard in lots of markets and stuff. If I said the racist garbage that Don Imus had said, can you imagine? I mean, I would have been off the air in a minute, okay? I didn't say anything approaching that. It wasn't even racial, and got run off in Beckley. Okay, the fact of the matter is, the right wing will put up with racist garbage from pigs like Don Imus. They'll put up with it, and they'll go ha ha ha, isn't that cute, and move on because they think that nobody will call him on it.
Yeah, well, I'm in total agreement, and I'm in agreement on Ann Coulter. She needs to be, they need a country for people like that, I'd even be willing to let to vote to taxes to support their food if they would just get out of this country and quit putting the kind of rubbish that they do out. But that's not going to happen. And to pick out one issue or one guy, and when all the other, look at Chris Rock at the garbage he puts out on racial issues. And I've watched him, and I don't dislike him. I recognize it as a matter of conversation or a matter of comedy or whatever. But where does it end? Where does this I call it raw nerve thing end? Does it end in a racial?
Yeah, it ends when somebody gets killed.
That's exactly where it's heading for.
And it's happened before. It's happened before, though, Ed. The guy's name has escaped me. He was a talk show host in Denver.
Yeah, I remember when he got I shot him.
Yeah, and Alan Berg.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of Nazi skinhead SOBs gunned him down for criticizing Nazis. Gunned him down because he was Jewish. Yeah,
well,
that's where the right wing takes these things.
Where did these guys come from? Where was their parents? Where was their teachings in school?
That's what they were taught, Ed. That's the thing. That's what at home. Yeah, absolutely at home. All this stuff starts in the home.
Well, the penalty, if that can be proven, should be to the parents.
Yeah, where did the people who killed Emmett Till? You remember Emmett Till?
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered for allegedly whistling at a white woman in Mississippi. He was from Chicago. He was barely a teenager. Where did the people who killed him learn to do what they did? They learned it from the cradle on up, Ed.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think that we should have Jesse Jackson and even Al Sharpton, as much as I respect his opinions and what he's trying to do, to be doing the long shot on a guy that the station should be boycotted, or you shouldn't buy the product that they put out as long as these guys do that. But what is an apology worth?
In Imus's case, Ed, it's not worth anything because I've got a list here of about 12 different times. Let's see, he called for a nuclear device to be dropped on the Palestinians and said, "I'm sorry." The list is as long as my arm. You know, every time he does one of these, "I'm sorry." You know, and we've got something we say to our kids here in this house, Ed. After a while, you know, when they keep doing it again and again and again, they keep saying, "I'm sorry."
"I'm sorry" is not good.
Yeah, "I'm sorry" doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's no different than these stations that carry Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. You're talking about a racist. Rush Limbaugh has got a monopoly on it.
Sure. And so does Ann Coulter, and so does Michelle Malkin.
Yeah.
The entire and that's one of the, I guess that's one of the lights that we're trying to shine. Don Imus didn't do this once. He's done it a dozen times. You know, he called or one of the people on his program, and he ha 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 sat there and laughed, called Hillary Clinton a bitch, and then suggested that she was going to have gold teeth, cornrows, and be giving gang signs. Okay, you can't get any more overtly racist than that.
Well,
and we're sorry, and it goes on. But see, that's just Don Imus. The sickness, and maybe I should have gone into this a little bit with Dennis Yedwab. The sickness is party wide, and that's why I was talking about the chuckles and then the outright laughter when Ann Coulter called John Edwards a faggot. Okay.
Well, you know, what is the penalty? You know a little bit of law. Why can't they give her a penalty of time in prison or automatic lawsuit, automatic kicked off the air? Why can't stuff like that happen to both parties for doing stuff like that?
Because of the First Amendment. Government cannot step in and suppress speech. The only hope for dealing with that kind of speech comes from the consumer. Ed, I've got some people waiting, but I sure have enjoyed it. I hope you'll call back again, please.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
You take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now. All right, and let's try again and see if JP's with us. You there, JP?
Yeah, can you hear me, Bob?
Yeah, I got you now.
Great. Hey, I don't know if you want to keep talking about Don Imus and all that, and I don't know if you read my Ass Clowns of the Week from last night, but Don Imus made the number two spot on my list.
I saw that.
Pottersville?
Yeah.
And
you are, of course, JP from Welcome to Pottersville.
Yeah, thanks. And I made a point that, you know, we've got to stop treating racist comments that come out of the mouths of people like Bill O'Reilly and Don Imus and Ann Coulter as isolated, regrettable lapses of judgment. We've got to start being able to put the pieces together and recognize a pattern of racism. Okay, you know, Spockle's brain, he used to be a very small blogger until he took on another radio station in San Francisco.
Right, we covered that story with some depth, yeah.
Right, and I can't use the call letters on your radio station, but we all know who it is. And he took on Melanie Morgan and her merry band of racists, and he hit them where they hurt.
Right in the wallet.
Started sending these clips to their sponsors and saying, hey, you see what your money is subsidizing? And they're like, oh, my God, we never knew. And these huge companies just started backing out one after the other. Credit card companies, Visa, MasterCard, and all these companies, this is how you do it. Yes, government can't step in and regulate free speech, but you hit them where it hurts. And this is what Spockle's brain hit upon, and this is what works. It's like with Ann Coulter. At least 9 newspapers took her column out of their papers.
And for good, you know, for good reason. Again, we're not saying she doesn't have the right to say this, but we should be willing, as liberals or progressives, to say that we are not compelled to support it.
And she should face the consequences of the things that she says at CPAC and in her column and in her books and so forth. And that goes for every right winger out there. And you got to hit them where it hurts. You got to hit them in the pocketbook. You got to hit them in their corporate sponsorship. And these people are subsidizing this hate speech, and they don't even know it. And this is how you fight back. You hit them where it hurts. You hit them in the wallet. Because, like I said, we can't keep treating these comments, you know, calling Hillary Clinton a bitch and, you know, making stupid comments about the Rutgers basketball team. You know, these people, we have a right to hold these people accountable. And they should be held accountable, just like Al Franken and Air America, you know, for their so-called hate speech, you know. And you're right, that the odds are stacked in the right wing's favor and not in our favor, and we've got to do something about this. And I can sense the tide is turning, and I think it really started with Spocko's brain.
I think it did too, that because it was the first time that I saw somebody on our side of the debate actually take, because the conservatives, have, like I said, have been very, very good at this, organizing, you know, and they're still doing it. The American Family Association is out there attacking union workers on assembly lines at Ford, trying to lose their, get them their jobs destroyed because Ford has the unmitigated temerity to advertise in a gay magazine.
Right.
And they're very good at this stuff.
John Aravosis is all over that on America Blog.
Yeah, and the religion industry boycotting Disney for having gay days in Florida.
And we're on the subject of Disney, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but
no, okay.
What Spocko did on his little blog, which used to be on another server, I'm not going to mention their name, but, you know, what he did, even though he did make some good headway, it wasn't without reprisals. And you know that Disney sick their lawyers because Disney owns that San Francisco radio station.
Mm-hmm.
They stick the lawyers on him. They leaned on his ISP, and they folded faster than a drop accordion. And
yeah,
they just shut his blog down completely. He was up and running again 24 hours later, and now he's bigger than ever.
And he's shown the way. He's shown that we can do that kind of thing,
right?
Because we're a consumer culture, JP. Whether we like it or not, from the cradle up, we are taught to want things and to feel like we are less than the kind of people we need to be unless we have thing X. Mm-hmm. And we are never encouraged to take inventory of the consequences of our support for those things.
Right.
Because I think maybe as liberals or progressives, we sort of expect things to sort themselves out. But they don't, and we do, and we have got to wake up. We've got to understand that we have a duty. If we care about the debate, and if we care about the nature of the culture, to let people know that we won't support them. You know, I forget what the mattress ad was that used to run on Limbaugh, but I'd be out in the car and I'd hear that mattress and I'd call them up and say, you know, I don't care if you've got the best mattress in the world, as long as you're advertising with that fascist freak, I'm not going to buy one. And I'll urge my friends not to buy one, and I'll tell them that they advertise with you. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but he started, at one point, there was an advertising campaign for Florida orange juice. And that campaign was run away from Limbaugh because he's such an ugly freak.
But what really irked me about the Spockels brain incident, and I hate to keep mentioning him over and over again.
No, that's okay. Personally, I think he was a little bit of a patriot.
I mean, so do I, and it's such a juicy subject. I mean, I have to keep mentioning it, but, you know, these people that went after Spocko and his ISP, you know, Disney's lawyers, you know, they're basically saying that, you know, he was violating the law and he was violating the fair usage law, and these people don't have a right to know what they're subsidizing, blah, 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 and they're just really, by conspicuous relief, it just made them look even more ridiculous than they already are, you see. And this, the reprisal, I mean, oh, these powerful left-wing liberal bloggers, Spockel's brain had like 19 readers a day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I if you look at my blog, you'll notice I have 20,000 hits already just for today alone, okay?
Yeah.
This guy had 19. Okay, I wouldn't be able to make a dent in Disney's legal stable, okay? They're making this guy sound like he's John Aravosis and Media Matters and, you know, and Coe's, you know, all rolled up into one, and it's a giant liberal juggernaut, you know, and we have to squash this man immediately. And, you know, what Spocko did was he sent these clips to these sponsors, and he said, look, I'm not telling you to pull your sponsorship, but I want you to know what you're subsidizing. And it worked. I mean, there's this San Francisco radio station that carries Melanie Morgan and her cohorts. You know, they've lost at least five major sponsors because of Spocko's brain. And this is how you got to do it. You got to hit them where it really hurts.
And you've got to be willing to stand up when they swing back because they're mean.
Right. And we've laid fallow for too long, and now we're finally starting to fight back. Now we're starting to get our act together.
Exactly. We've got to run. We're fresh out of time. I hope we'll be talking some more in the future. I need to tell you that the chat room is asking me to tell you that they hold you in the highest esteem.
Really? Where's that?
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We've got a chat room there.
Okay, I got to look it up. Do these people know me already?
Oh yeah, they're familiar with Welcome to Pottersville.
Okay, Bob. Well, you'll be hearing from me soon.
We're some very blog savvy people.
Cool.
All right, you take care.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
To everybody on hold, I apologize. I didn't mean to, but you know, please call back. You're first in line. I promise. Thanks ever so much to Agnes for coming back and making this a Monday worth living through. And many thanks, of course, to everyone else associated with the program, John Fox, who engineers it, Brian Reznor, who announces it, and, of course, the sine qua non of the Head On Radio Network, Ben Birch of the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. If the programs on the horn matter to you, if they mean something to you, then you've got Ben Birch to thank. He doesn't send a bill. He doesn't charge for you to listen to the stream. Every stream that there is comes from Ben. He's got a fundraiser going on. For God's sakes, do the right thing, please. And, of course, all the programs on the horn are brought to you by the many thousand workers of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who get up every day and they go out and build the American dream. And building the American dream and supporting this network, they're saving the American dream. Many thanks to the moderators in the chat room. Many thanks to the news ninjas. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
You're listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Gonzalez in trouble as tide turns against Team Texas. Panel OK subpoenas an attorney probe. For wary conservatives, all eyes on Bush. Deal reached on UN sanctions versus Iran. President rejects health care proposal. Giuliani will miss firefighters' event. Giuliani law firm lobbies in Texas for Chavez-controlled Citgo. The new Dean political plan. Gingrich says it's too early to campaign for 2008. Web censorship spreading globally. Chertoff warns of web of terrorism. McCain draws heat from Vet Group and Club for Growth. World may get greener, then wilt due to warming. Israel not enthusiastic about strike on Iran, says Olmert. And Al-Qaeda number three says he's planned 9/11 and a hell of a lot of other things. Oh, we're going to rip into this one, folks. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now. Thank you.